1916 is an issue that I've been working on for a number of years. If you remember when we were discussing the stadium issue, the Twin Stadium issue a number of years ago, Harry Mears had a bill before the House, and I had an amendment on the floor that dealt with this issue. We tried to do it in bill form, but really didn't get too far with it. However, if we had passed that amendment or passed that bill, we'd have a Twin Stadium being constructed today. But what this bill is, it builds a it allows one privately owned casino. The privately owned casino would have to put up $450 million up front for the license. Also in the bill, it covers the stadium issue. It builds three stadiums. The $450 million that comes up front for the license fee would be put in a dedicated account, and we could let revenue bonds on based on that $450 million that's in the bank. That $450 million would guarantee the payments on the bonds to get the stadiums constructed. And we've been through the Stadium Screening Commission or Committee, and they've looked at this issue. I'm a little bit dumbfounded by why the screening committee has looked at the siting issue and listened to the different local units of government that have come in with their proposals and really haven't discussed funding at all. They heard our presentation, but yesterday when they were trying to put their package together, all they could really concentrate on was the siting issues and really didn't discuss the funding. They talked about funding coming from the local units of government and their portions, but each one of the packages didn't really discuss how the state money, where the state money was going to come from, and they all included money coming from the state of Minnesota. So this is a way to get the stadiums built without any taxpayer dollars going into this and not being guaranteed by any taxpayer dollars either. The $450 million up front would guarantee the payments on the revenue bonds. And we can go into that in more detail if you'd like. But the real issue here is that this would have to be a constitutional amendment to change the Constitution to allow one privately owned casino in the state of Minnesota. That would give the voters the opportunity to vote not only to have a privately owned casino in the state of Minnesota, but it also gives them an opportunity to say, yes, this is how we want these stadiums built. We don't want it coming from taxpayer dollars. We want it. We want to save the Minnesota Twins. We want to keep them here. We like the Twins. We want to keep the Minnesota Vikings here, but we don't want to have to pay for it out of our taxpayer dollars. And this is a way to get it done. I don't know if you folks have seen the poll that was done by the St. Cloud State University. It's a very respected poll in the state of Minnesota. I think it came out back in December. And in that poll, it didn't ask specifically about a casino being built to fund stadiums, but it did talk about the stadiums. And in that poll, they were asked, do you want taxpayer dollars to go to fund these stadiums? And I think it was around the 30% range said, no, we don't want taxpayer dollars to go to build stadiums. And when the question was asked, do you want to keep the Minnesota Twins and Minnesota Vikings, and you like the Minnesota Twins? Yes. And that percentage was up over 70%. So they want to keep the Twins and the Vikings here. We think it's the Twins and the Vikings are great to have in the state of Minnesota, and we should keep them here. And I think it's becoming more and more of an issue with the voters. And if the legislature doesn't get something done on this issue, I think voters could let people know in the polls how they feel about not taking care of this issue. So I can go through the bill article by article if you'd like. The very first article is the constitutional amendment that would be on the 2004 ballot, asking the voters if they would allow one privately owned casino to build these three stadiums. Article 2 is basically some almost boilerplate language that's in other states, that how you operate a casino and how we would let the license, etc. And I could answer any questions on that you might have. And Article 3 is the stadium funding and how the dedicated account would work. This would be a $450 million upfront fee, plus we would charge a 12% tax on the casino gross gaming revenues. So it would be a 12% tax to the state of Minnesota. And that would go into the dedicated account to pay off the bonds. So you, essentially, you could keep that $450 million in the bank, if this all worked out right, to guarantee the payment of the bonds, plus when that revenue, that 12% revenue is coming into the state, that would essentially pay off the bonds. So as these stadiums are starting to be constructed, the Twins would probably be first, and you'd let the bonds for that. And down the road, you would do the Gopher Stadium, and down the road, you do the Viking Stadium. So you wouldn't let all the bonds out all at the same time. So the payments coming in would pay off the bonds as needed. So that's how that works, and I can go over that in more detail if you like. And I should also mention that once the bonds are all paid off to these stadiums, then the $450 million becomes available to the general fund. And we continue to have the 12% tax coming into the state that could go into the general fund. And that's stated in the bill. So that would be additional revenue to the state of Minnesota. And it wouldn't be taxpayer dollars, but it would be a huge amount of money that could go to just about anything in the state. The lawful gambling in Article 4, we reduced the tax on lawful gambling. That's the charitable gambling groups. They came to us and they wanted... You know, the charitable gambling folks really haven't been on board with casino gambling because they think that it might take away from some of their profits or whatever. We tried to help those folks out, and we reduced their tax. They've been trying to get this tax reduced for a number of years. But we supplant that with 1% of this 12% going into the general fund, and that will probably actually bring in more money than what we reduce the tax on the charitable gambling folks. There's a number of other issues in the bill about construction. We talk about things like we have to use iron from that's produced from Minnesota taconite, some other minor things like that. But I'd be glad to answer any questions that you might have, but I really don't see how we're going to get three stadiums built without any taxpayer dollars other than this proposal. And no one else has come forward before the committee, the screening committee for the stadium committee, to talk about funding. We were the only ones there. This gets the job done. Doesn't cost. It specifically states too that we can't increase any sales tax in order to get this done. So this is a way to get the stadium done without raising taxes.
Thank you, Representative Hackbarth. Do you have any testifiers to speak on your bill? Or?
I do have a gentleman in the audience. If we have any technical questions, he can come up and speak to that.
Representative Burrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And by the way, members of the committee and members of the audience, we're just, this is a presentation bill. We are not taking any votes on this. There's no amendments or anything like that. And the people are going to be testifying are people that are basically in part of the presentation. Everybody has 30 minutes to do their presentation per bill. And we should take a minute to probably introduce our newest member of our committee, Representative Scott Newman. He got all dressed up for us, came on time. What more can one say? Welcome to our committee and welcome to the legislature.
Thank you very much.
Representative Hackbarth, I got a couple of questions, Chairman Haas. First of all, when does the NFL football folks and the baseball league, are they nervous about having gambling revenues go into their casino? I mean, the gambling revenues, the casino going into their stadiums, is that, have they talked about that at all?
We, Mr. Chairman, we have talked to the Vikings and the Twins and about a number of different issues and how this proposal would work, and they have not mentioned anything about that issue. Now, this money doesn't go to the Twins or any local unit of government. It goes directly to the state of Minnesota, and then they let the revenue bonds to let that out. So it really has no connection to the particular team owners.
Okay, the other question I would have is if we build these stadiums and they're the recipients of the stadiums are still, the ownership of the stadiums goes to who? And if it goes to the teams, and they can, the owner then sell the team at a higher profit because they have a stadium and reap the rewards of the revenue that we've given them?
Okay. the way this works is it spells out in the bill that the team owners have to work with a local unit of government. And if you look at the proposals that have come before the screening committee, that's what they've been doing anyway. The team has to work with a particular local unit of government, the city of Minneapolis, city of St. Paul, Anoka County, the city of Blaine, etc. They have to partner with a local unit of government. And the local unit of government is going to end up being the owner of the stadium, not necessarily the team owners. I don't know if the teams really want to own the stadiums. They want to use the stadiums to make profits for themselves, of course. But the proposals that I've seen is the local units of government will be the owners of the stadium and bear that burden. And also, in the bill, these teams have to sign a 30-year lease to get this deal done.
And then, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hackbarth, but if they sell the team, who and generates more profits because they have a stadium that they have a 30-year lease on? I know, and I think the Hennepin County proposal has something about that money has to go back to, I assume then, the local government that owns the stadium, if that would be fair to say.
So,
Representative Hackbarth.
Mr. Chairman. Representative Rhodes, if I am to follow you right, if the team were to sell and they would gain a profit just because they had a stadium,
right.
You're saying that portion of that profit would have to go back to that local unit of government?
Representative Hackbarth, what I'm saying is that once you have a stadium, I think the team's value, it's a given, goes
That's
up.
That's correct. I agree.
And we're not getting to the stadium debate, but the issue is you are tied into that issue because you're providing the revenue from that instead of the revenue from your casino going to the general fund, it's going to pay off bonds for three stadiums.
Right.
I'm not worried about the University of Minnesota going anywhere, but I'm concerned that somebody would sell the team and reap the benefits of having a stadium and at our expense. That's what I'm getting at.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rose, that's correct, and we don't address that issue in this bill. That if the team sells, they were to get more of a profit. It doesn't say that some of that profit would come back to the local unit of government at all. It doesn't say that. But it does say in the bill that they have to sign a 30-year lease and that team has to stay here if it were to sell. It can't move out. It has to stay here with that 30-year lease.
Representative Hackbarth, and members, through people I've talked to in regards to selling the Vikings, because that's been in the paper, that the price tag for the Vikings goes up $200 million with a new stadium. And that would go directly to the owner. So Representative Rhodes is correct. We need to make sure that, you know, if we put money into it and the team is sold for a profit, that we participate in that profit as a state, because we're putting money out. That's really the key. Representative Jacobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hackbarth, you reference a 12% tax on gross. Is that a true gross, i.e. before prizes, or is this 12% on after prizes?
Representative Hackbarth.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Jacobson, yes, after prizes.
Okay.
Other questions?
I'll let it go at that. Thanks.
Okay. Representative Hackbarth, who would be the potential builders or bidders on this? Do you have any idea on
the
casino?
On the casino, Mr. Chairman? It could be open to anyone. I've been working with a group, Lakes Entertainment, Mr. Lyle Berman. I'm putting this package together, but it would be open to anyone. Park Place or the Native American Indians could come in and bid on this. It would be open to anyone. And I can go over the details of that, too, if you'd like. Oh, that would all work.
All right. Other questions? Members. Representative Solberg.
What would happen for bidders if you change the first number from $450 million to $1.5
billion? Representative Hackbarth.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, if it's the will of this committee, I think that could happen. I don't think you get very many bidders. I don't. The concern on the screening committee was that you might not get any bidders at $450 million, but I think you would. I think you'd get, you know, maybe 5, 6, 8 different groups coming in to bid on it. But you know, $1.2 billion or $1.5 billion or whatever it is that's going to take to build those three stadiums, it works with this package, and we've showed those figures in our presentation that as those bonds are let out, that this can all be covered. And get the job done at $1.2 billion. spread out over 30 years.
Representative Hackbarth, or Representative Solberg, are you done?
Yeah.
Okay. Representative Hackbarth, the other question I have is, you know, we'd have a contract with the team saying they have this lease, but look at what happened to the Twins a couple years ago when the league tried to consolidate them and eliminate our team because of record, low attendance to the games and things like that. Do we have protection from that? Because the league is going to have to come in, or that could be an excuse to dissolve the team and get out from any obligations that the any sports team would have.
There's, Mr. Chairman, there's nothing in this bill that addresses that issue at all, but it does produce the money in order to get the stadium mm-hmm. built and get it paid back. Okay. So it covers the cost of the stadium.
Okay. Representative Hackbarth, I think from you know, a taxpayer's standpoint, that if the state is going to put any money into it, the taxpayer, you know, we have to protect our investment. And if that is a loophole, which I think became a loophole for our lease at the Metrodome, if I'm not mistaken, that created that situation. And, you know, we would be left hanging with the Metrodome under that situation and what we would do with it. So, you know, we could have a stadium, and 5 years after we build it, one of our teams could pull out because of whatever excuse they could make up, and if it's not addressed, we got to make sure that, you know, all our bases are covered on everything so that the state and the taxpayers are not coming up short on the deal.
Mr. Chairman, this bill guarantees that the taxpayers will not be on the hook, that the $450 million and the 12% tax that comes in will guarantee the payment on that stadium. It's not going to cost taxpayers any money at all, and you know, unless maybe it's sitting there empty or something, and then the local unit of government that owns it would have to do something with it. Maybe it'll cost something that way if it closes up. But to get the things built, it doesn't put the taxpayer on the hook at all.
Representative Jacobson.
To that point, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hackbarth, recent history in the area of stadiums, and I apologize for digressing that direction because that's not really where we're going.
We don't want to get in that debate, but we need to address some of this.
It relates to this issue. Recent history has shown that a new ballpark is only a positive benefit or an adequate positive benefit in revenue streams for, it's getting down now as short as 3 or 4 years. If, say, 10 years down the road, all of a sudden the Twins decide now there's something better and greater out there for revenue streams, and okay, fine, they're going to move, then what? I think that is a legitimate concern. Yes, we do have a 30-year lease, but we're seeing a much, much shorter life cycle on stadium at this point in time. Is there any provision to make sure everybody's protected on that?
Representative Hackbarth.
What more can we do than sign a 30-year lease? I don't know what you'd like to get at, Mr. Jacobson. Representative Jacobson, how are you going to solve that issue?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's a very valid point.
I think the quality of life in the state of Minnesota says that we like the Twins in the state of Minnesota. We like the Vikings. We like the Gophers. We want to keep them here. Fans enjoy the teams. And I think that the people of Minnesota are tired of hearing the stadium issue. They want this issue solved. They want these stadiums built. They want to keep the Vikings and Twins here. They want a nice stadium for the Gophers. And they don't want to pay for it. And, folks, this is the way to get the job done. It's pretty simple. You know, it's as simple as that. This really solves the problem. It really does.
Representative Rhodes. Mr. Chairman, Representative Hackbarth, would they be also, I know we're getting into the stadium issue a little bit, but mm-hmm. would they be putting money into this as well? And naming rights, is that addressed? All that, is that?
So there's that's all addressed in the bill. Mr. Chairman, Representative Rhodes, that's all addressed in the bill. Yes, the Twins and the Vikings and the Gophers, according to this bill, all have to put money into the bill to build the stadiums.
And do you have a set amount at this point?
Yes, it's this bill is very flexible. In the bill right now, it says 50% that they have to put up front. In the proposal that we presented to the stadium screening committee, the Vikings and the Twins, it would be 40% and 30% by the Gophers, but we can. This bill is very flexible. We can make it all the way from guaranteeing the 50% all the way down to this, and we can change that in the bill as we move forward. But if you look at the proposal, this covers the whole $1.2 billion. That's the figures that we were working with in the beginning. Now it's gone up to maybe $1.5 or so. But what we started with was $1.2 billion spread out over 30 years. This bill pays for that, along with the Twins and the Vikings putting in 40% of the money. Working with local units of government. And they have to pick a local unit of government to work with.
Okay. Well, if you get, if I'm kind of on a different direction, if we want to finish stadium questions first.
Let's go a different direction. We want to get out of stadiums. We want to get out of sports teams, okay?
And I'm sorry, I came in a little late, so if this was addressed before, I apologize, Mr. Chair. But I see the revenue, the gross gaming revenue is estimated to be $200 million to $350 million annually, which, if I recall back to last spring, that's kind of higher than we've seen for the other casino proposals. Do you have, is there financial projections more detailed than this that's based on?
Representative Van Park?
Mr. Chairman, actually, I think that's a conservative figure. I think it'll probably do more than that. We're trying to keep the, you know, we're not trying to get way out there. I've seen a number of proposals. It's hard to say how much that's going to do. Mystic Lake Casino, I can't remember exactly what those figures are. It's like the third most profitable casino and successful casino in the world, and I think they're much, much higher than that.
Follow-up, Representative. Are there kind of more detailed projections that
I could bring up Mr. Jim Belisle, and he could answer those questions. He's a gaming consultant in the industry, been in this business for many, many years, and he could probably answer that question for you.
Do you want to further pursue it? Or?
We can, or if there's a document, is either way. It's up to you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. State your name and who you represent for the record. And you may
Jim Belisle. I'm a consulting in the gaming industry, been in the gaming industry since 1990. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Thiessen, with regards to your question, if you're going to be realistic when you submit a gaming bill, and I've been working with Representative Hackbarth for 3 years on this gaming bill, I've had a number of roads, which we've certainly anticipated when we started. You can come in and throw out real high numbers to try and say, if you pass my gaming proposal, we're going to give all this money to the state. I don't think that that's the proper way to do it. I think the proper way to do it is to try and level with everybody, tell them the truth up front, and if you do something better than that, then that's expectation is much better than what you projected. With regards to gross gaming revenues after prizes are paid out, on the basis of the 7-county metropolitan area, and this bill states that whoever gets the casino license will have the right to build a casino in the 7-county metropolitan area. It's not site-specific. It shouldn't be, in my opinion, because I think that that's up to the municipalities that may or may not want it. I know that there's a bill that will probably be before you today where there's a question about whether the municipality wants it. We don't want to get into that battle. Don't have a dog in that fight. But with regards to the population base and with regards to the competition in the area, I'm very comfortable, and anybody with any expertise in the gaming industry would be extremely comfortable to state that a casino in this metropolitan area would do somewhere between $200 million to $350 million gross gaming revenue based on the existing competition. And I'd like to address that existing competition in a minute. It probably will do higher. If you want my honest opinion, I think it will do around $400 to $450 million. What Representative Hackbarth's bill deals with is it deals with the idea of getting three stadiums done and being able to perform with financial responsibility to retire the debt of those three casinos. In the projections that we proposed to the stadium screening committee, we used the sample that all of the stadiums would be built at the same time, which wouldn't happen. But the reason that we did it that way is to show that if they were all built at the same time, the way this bill is put together, it will, in fact, retire the debt. And more than likely, in addition to retiring the debt, we'll still generate somewhere between $25 to as much as $40 million a year to the which would go into the stadium fund, any excess money going into that stadium fund on an annual basis from the gross gaming revenues would flow out of that and into the general fund of the state. Retiring the debt and the excess, in my opinion, will be somewhere between $25 million to $40 million. This bill requires that whoever gets that gaming license, that license is renewed each year for a $10,000 fee. At the time that the licensee gives the state $10,000, they have to provide a letter of credit from a financial institution guaranteeing that for the next 12 months, spread equally over a 12-month period, they will generate $15 million in gross gaming revenue to the state. So in addition to the $450 million up front, this bill guarantees that whoever the licensee is will provide a financial instrument at the beginning of each year for that 30-year period guaranteeing $15 million. If the bonds are retired over the total 30-year period, then that $15 million will go to be used to offset the debt payment on the bonds on an annual basis, which incidentally on an annual basis $1.2 billion in revenue bonds at about the going rate right now, which is about 5.375% depending on the bond, the guarantees, etc., is about an $80 million debt payment per year. The way that this bill is structured, the $450 million will go into a stadium financing fund. That money will not be touched for the first 15 years. At 3%, which is the projection that we used on this, of interest accumulated on an annual basis at the end of the 15-year period, that $450 million has grown to about $701.8 million, which is still in that fund. Now, the way this bill is set up, and there was talk about guarantees, Mr. Chairman, I believe you brought it up. First of all, the Twins and the Vikings must sign a 30-year lease. They have the right to sell if they so desire, but all of the obligations of what they sign, including the financial responsibilities, go with that sale. And with regards to them being able to move, and with regards to the windfall, and that was addressed, the reason that the windfall is not addressed in this bill, Mr. Chairman, is because we really don't have a dog in that fight. What we're trying to do with this bill, what Representative Hackbarth is trying to do with the bill, is to show a way that it can be done that will honor the wishes of the governor of no increased taxes, that will not put the onus of paying for these stadiums on the back of the everyday fan or on the back of the people that don't enjoy going to the Twins and the Vikings game. It requires the owners of the team to put up 40% of the stadium with a cap on the Viking stadium at $550 million. Now, if they want to build a $700 million stadium, they pay for the extra $150 million. But the $550, that figure was used because they've estimated that would be the cost of what they want. On the Twin Stadium at $400 million. Same thing. If they want to go beyond, the owners put up the extra money. And on the Gopher Stadium at $250 million, which is actually $30 million than what they project. And in the Gopher situation, they would have to come up with 30% of that through whatever sources they choose. But it requires the owners of the Vikings and the Twins to personally guarantee those payments for the life of the revenue bonds. So if they sell the team, they still have to guarantee that their payments and the way that we did the projections, and we didn't, Representative Hackbarth didn't put this in the bill because if you give the bill too restrictive, you got to make sure one thing, you protect the taxpayer. You live up to the stated goals of the governor to not to increase any taxes and put the responsibility of building those stadiums on the back of the Minnesota taxpayer. But still allow the state and whatever stadium committee they end up with to oversee and do the negotiating, and the municipality that is negotiating with the owner, give them the freedom of doing what they feel is in the best interest of their municipality and the best interest of the state with regards to negotiating. So, Mr. Chair, your question is well addressed because it allows the municipality then when they're sitting talking to the owners of the Twins or the Vikings saying, if you get your stadium and the value of your asset, the team, goes up $200 million and you decide to sell 2 years later, we want part of that. If you put it in the bill, in my opinion, you limit it. So I don't think you can write a bill that says we can do everything for everybody. So what Representative Hackbarth has been trying to do for 3 years is address the situation where let's get these stadiums financed and give the state and the municipality the money in their hip pocket that when they're sitting across from an owner saying, look, we have the ability to get this done now. You're going to pay 40%. We'll want to work with you. We don't want to run you out of town, but here's what your responsibility is going to be. It's going to be 40%. If you want to spread it over 30 years, it's 40% of the cost of the stadium over 30 years plus the interest, 5.375%. So the way the projections worked out, strictly for presentation purposes to the Stadium Screening Committee, is that we retired their owner's debt over a 15-year period. And if you look at the projections in front of you, you notice that we have question marks for the final 15-year period for both the Twins and the Vikings and even the Gophers. And the reason is because that gives you the ability to say, what are you going to pay us for the next 15 years? So this bill, the purpose of this bill wasn't to tie anybody's hands, but it will guarantee that the owners have to put up a personal guarantee, some form of financial instrument that will guarantee their 40% payment whether they sell or not. And if they sell, that goes right along with it.
Representative Peace and follow-up?
Yeah, and thank you. That was helpful.
Quite get so lengthy.
Yeah. So, I guess one of my questions is, it's $450 million up front, and then someone's going to guarantee, well, basically revenues of $15 million. $15 million, is that right?
$15 million a year, guaranteed.
Guaranteed.
But it'll probably be a lot more than that.
Has someone done kind of the underlying pro formas and stuff to come up with those numbers? I mean, that's a big upfront investment. Someone must have an idea that they're going to make some money on this thing.
Oh, sure.
And do we have those documents, and who kind of came up with those pro formas?
Mr. Blyle?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Thiessen, we did pro formas on the basis of what is this market worth by putting that type of money up front. That's one of the reasons for the 30-year exclusive. The market is, if there were five casinos, obviously isn't worth putting $450 million up front. We feel that on the basis of a casino doing in the range of between $250 million to about $400 million, that amount of money up front makes sense. And just to show you where we're coming from.
And can I just interrupt for 1 second, Mr. Chair? Who is we?
Lyle Berman from Lakes Entertainment and a group that he's working with regards to this. There's probably not going to be any one single gaming entity that would come forward. There may be several: Park Place, Harrah's, Circus, MGM Grand. They may decide to try and take it on. But more than likely, they would probably do what they did in the Windsor model, which is a different revenue model. But in Windsor, Ontario, when bids were put out, Caesars, Hilton, and Circus combined to come in and operate it under one license. Depending on how this thing all shakes out, I suspect that might be. But one of the things about this bill is it allows anybody to come forward and put a bid on it, but prior to putting the bid on it, you must file a financial instrument showing that you have the financial capabilities of being able to follow through on it if you're in fact given the license. We think that over a period of about 15 to 18 years, you would recover that money. In addition to, you still have to retire the debt. The stadium bills on the basis of the caps of this bill, the stadium costs on the basis of the caps of this bill are $1.2 billion. I think that a development, certainly the type of development that we envision, would probably be about a $350 to $500 million development hotel casino complex. So you're looking at around $1.5 to $1.6 billion total construction. Incidentally, it'll create 7,000 construction jobs, about $700 million in payroll tax, generating about $54 million in payroll tax to the state over and above. The casino hotel operation will create about 3,000 jobs with about $54 million annual payroll.
Representative Stolberg. Representative Stolberg.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, I didn't get your name. Is it
Belisle? My name is Jim Belisle, Representative Stolberg.
Blauer?
Belisle.
Belisle, I'm sorry. I had to leave the task force when you gave your presentation, so I apologize for that. But have you done negotiations with the Twins on the 40%?
I've had Mr. Chairman, Mr. Stolberg, we've had conversations with both the Vikings and the Twins, but there's not really a reason for us to have negotiations with the Twins. That is really going to be the responsibility of, beginning with, I suppose, the Stadium Screening Committee, Representative Stolberg, which you sit on. Once again,
I don't think we're going to negotiate with the Twins.
Well,
it's been kind of. Let me just interrupt, because I think the 20% of 550 is 220 million or 220 million, right?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stolberg, that would be for the Vikings. The Vikings are capped out at 500. Their stadium is 550 million.
And Mr. Chairman, what was the cost of the Twins?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stolberg, $400 million is what's in this bill. It's capped at $400
million. So, Mr. Chairman, I think that's $160 million then?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stolberg, that's correct.
Representative Stolberg.
That's pretty good negotiations. The Twins, I think, have stated publicly for the last few years that their top number is 120 that they were committing in. They would only. They also, I think, want to do that over a 30-year lease payment. So there's an additional $6 million getting out of the Twins. That's kind of neat. I don't know if they would necessarily like that, but I suppose we can pass a law and say, and give us six of the $60 million. That's what kind of what we're doing. But Mr. Chairman, I was wondering the gross revenue to the state of is $15 million guaranteed under this proposal over and above the 450. I wonder if I see Mr. Anderson is in the audience. I wonder if I could ask him a question.
Mr. Anderson, would you come on down? Give it a rise. Game show here.
And he's not, this isn't a lawyer type of question. I mean, he doesn't know what the question is going to be. And I don't know what the answer is going to be.
You didn't prep him before time?
I didn't prep him beforehand. So this is kind of on shaky ground on my part. I want to, because you're always supposed to know what the answer is before you ask the question. But Mr. Anderson, under current constitution, under current law, if we were to put, run by the lottery, 10 slots in each bar, or each, what would the net be to the state of Minnesota?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, George Anderson, Director of Minnesota State Lottery. I believe, Representative, that the estimate was a net $350 million. It is, of course, an entirely different structure, milieu, many, many, many venues. If I recall off the top of my head, 4,000. We estimated on 3,000. A quarter would not want it or might not be eligible.
So, Mr. Chairman, I know it's nice to have 3,000 jobs in the metropolitan area, additional jobs, while we're losing jobs in rural Minnesota, while our businesses that we have out there are really struggling, and that the casino in the metropolitan area would generate $15 million guarantee, and under current constitutional law, we'd have a way of getting $350 million. So I just want to bring up those. We could build the three stadiums in 3 years. Now, I know 40% of that 350, I think, goes to the fund. Is that correct? That's This is gross with 40% going in of that money going into the Environmental Protection Fund. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman and Representative, there are a variety of ways to structure that. I correct myself, I haven't been handed a number. 333.6 million.
It was in the ballpark anyway.
I'm sorry, your question.
Well, then 40% of that would then be dedicated. This is not over and above the dedication, is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, there are different techniques I believe we've discussed in the past could be applied in terms of upfront taxation, much as like is done with the in lieu of sales tax presently, where actual budget starts at 93% of the dollar instead of 100. That tax rate as an excise tax could be placed anywhere the legislature wants. That would reduce the Environmental Trust Fund. But if deemed a lottery, there is some dispute, legal issues, it would break down roughly 40% by Constitution, 40% for the Environmental Natural Resources Trust Fund and 60% of net for the general fund. And then sales tax we would recommend not be applied because of the impossibility of calculating against credits.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Anderson. I just wanted to have the committee to have a comparison of the amount of income for the state on one proposal as opposed to under the Constitution that we could do right now if we wanted.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Thank you very much. Do you have any closing comments?
For Representative Hackbarth.
Okay, Representative Hackbarth then.
Representative Silver brought an interesting issue up. Is there any reason why that casino could not be put in Grand Rapids?
And sure could be.
Or is there any reason why Grand Rapids couldn't have a stadium, a Vikings or Twins stadium out there? I mean, is there any reason why it has to be in the metro area?
Mr. Chairman, what I want to propose to have a combination of things. The new stadium will be in Grand Rapids with a very, very high-speed monorail train going up there. And so we can have a great experience of having a tailgate party all the way up with the casino on the train. Yeah, and bar too.
Yeah, right.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative by the lottery.
Mr. Blyle, do you have numbers for that?
We will by this afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, we'll sit down and talk about maybe we can bid on that. Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, in talking with Mr. Anderson very briefly here, and he stated that my numbers are conservative, and that's the way I guess I prefer to have. Wow. The numbers we're submitting, but if I may finish, the $333 million I believe that Mr. Anderson submitted was the net gaming revenue. That's revenue after prizes. There's no sales tax. There's no operating expense, et cetera, et cetera. So, and I don't think that he misrepresented. It's just I think that we might make sure that we're interpreting when we start talking about net revenues. When you're a private enterprise, net revenues are everything after taxes, including all taxes, all operating expenses, et cetera.
Mr. Chairman, I'm well understanding of that. What I wanted to be able to have the committee understand is two things. The casino in the metropolitan area doesn't necessarily help Greater Minnesota unless it's built in Grand Rapids or Alexandria or some other place. The other thing is I wanted to have everyone understand under the present Constitution, the legislature, if we have the will, has the authority right now to have a different venue of gaming that would, in fact, create a much more income to the state over a longer period of time. I just want to have some kind of comparison of numbers. Now, I know there's other numbers involved in that as well, taxes and so forth, but there's a huge difference between the guaranteed of $15 million coming into the state up front, I know, of the $450 million, but and $336 million coming into the state under present constitutional law. the potential.
Mr. Williams, Pulse Research, has a comment.
Mr. Chairman, no, I had a question for the witness, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Belisle, your estimate of $200 to $350 million gross gaming revenue was based, I assume, on a definition of gross gaming revenue that is gross wager less winnings actually paid out. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Williams, that is correct.
Mr. Chairman, I'm House Research, not a member of the legislature.
He doesn't want to be demoted.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, as I said that, I remember, because 2 years ago when I was here, you were sitting over in that chair. I'm sorry, I do remember that.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Belisle, that's not the way that the bill is actually, the way that the definition of gross gaming receipts is actually written in the bill. And is the definition that you're using consistent with what's actually in the bill?
Mr. Chairman, we do need to straighten that out. It was a mistake that we put in the bill, and that's going to come with an amendment to straighten that out.
Amendment will be coming. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Mr. Chairman, and that was my fault. If I may, Mr. Chairman, address Representative Solberg's point, and it's a point well taken. Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, with regards to building an out-state, out of metropolitan area casino, certainly, the Native Americans are not in favor of seeing any private casino, and I attended all of the meetings that Representative Rhodes' committee had 2 years ago around the state. Two of the things that came through in those meetings were, number one, we would like to get some revenue off of gaming. Gaming is a $3 billion industry in Minnesota, and we're basically not receiving any revenue. Number two is we don't want the state involved in gaming, and that just was the public speaking. But with regards to a metropolitan casino versus a rural casino, I believe the state of Minnesota has 17 casinos and a Native American casinos. The casinos that need the money the most have the smallest revenues, Red Lake and White Earth. If you go outstate with a casino in any direction, you will be impacting a Native American casino doing less revenue than the two casinos that are close to the metropolitan area, being Mystic Lake number one, Treasure Island number two. So not only is the market here, but by putting one casino privately owned for 30 years in the metropolitan area, you will have absolutely no impact. In fact, by saving the Twins and the Vikings and improving the Gophers facility, you will more than likely improve tourism into the state, and they come into this state from all areas, which could in fact raise revenues for the Native American casinos that are not located in the metropolitan area. And incidentally, I think will raise revenues for the casinos that are Native American casinos that are presently located near the metropolitan area. I don't believe there will be a great impact in a negative aspect with regards to Native American gaming. I'm sure that they will have a different opinion of that, but the fact of the matter is they don't think it will, and I'll use this and then I'll be quiet. In Mississippi, there's approximately 28 privately owned casinos. On the Gulf Coast, on some bordering cities, the border of the Mississippi River, which is the western boundary of Mississippi, and up near Memphis. There's one Native American Indian casino. It's located in the mid-central part of Mississippi, about 80 miles east of Jackson, Mississippi. It's the most successful casino in the state. So there can be a cohabitation between Native American casinos and privately owned casinos. Now, they're competing with 28. Here, it would be just the opposite. There would only be one private casino. It wouldn't come back to this legislative body for 30 years, and it solves not one, not two, but all three stadium problems without putting the onus on the back of the taxpayer.
Mr. Chairman,
a
little bit of knowledge sometimes is kind of dangerous. And I confess to having just a little bit of knowledge of Mississippi. I think there was also a process of at least a vote by the native or the people who live in Mississippi with the understanding there was going to be a limited amount of casinos, one or two, and it ended up to be 28. Now, I said that this is a little bit of knowledge, and I may stand corrected on it, but I would like to do some more research on the situation. But my contention isn't to get in a debate with Mr. on this. That's, and I understand why you would to be successful, you'd have to have a privately owned casino in the metropolitan area just because of the base here. My also other contention is that we have the ability under the Constitution right now, if we have the will as the legislative to do it, to spread that economic activity out all over the state of Minnesota and have some help into all the businesses that are struggling, you know, in the state of Minnesota without having a pick and a winner in the metropolitan area, and at the same time create a great deal more cash flow to the state of Minnesota to benefit than picking one casino. Now I understand that it's popular sometimes or attractive to have, let's have another casino in the metropolitan area, and we've had those proposals around, including those from Native Americans. But I just want the committee to have some numbers on what is available to us if we have the will to do it. I don't know if we have the will to do it necessarily, but that's a possibility.
Right, members, we're going to move on because we have three more proposals to hear. Representative Hackbarth, last words.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to state that I understand where Representative Solberg is coming from, and a lot of what he says is very, very true. But it doesn't solve the problem of getting the stadium issue solved. Mm-hmm. The stadium issue is a huge issue with people in the state of Minnesota. They want this issue solved. Putting slots in all the bars in the state of Minnesota doesn't put any upfront money of $450 million. It doesn't put the package together to get the stadiums done. Yes, that's true. We can do the slots in the state of Minnesota, but it just doesn't get the job done to get the stadiums built. This package gets the job done.
Thank you, Representative Hackbarth, Mr. Blyle. And
thank you, Mr.
We will have further discussion on this as we get into session. All right, the next item on the agenda, Representative Badrilla.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning,
and members of the committee.
Good morning. Welcome, and you may proceed.
Well, since we're discussing exciting concepts today, I wanted to bring one to the committee for discussion, and I want to thank the chairs of the committees for at least hosting the ability to have this discussion. I think it's a discussion that is long overdue, and it's not going away. I think it's an issue that deserves attention. It's become a topic of public frustration and concern. And as I said, I don't think it's going to go away. What I'm presenting today is press release information of the concept that I'd like to discuss and not a completed bill. I'm working on language, and there's still some significant discussions that are taking place with people inside and outside the legislature, and we have not come upon the exact language, but it is being worked on. The legislation that I'm proposing to introduce will call for the establishment of a new gaming corporation, and that will accept bid proposals from gaming operators and award a license for the establishment of a casino in the metro area. The corporation would determine the most lucrative, workable option in awarding the bid to one operator. I believe there is one of the handouts in the packet that you received just justifies why metro area. And it's a little page about tourism in Minnesota. And I think it just illustrates why the metro area is a good location for having a casino. If you look at the visitors just to Bloomington, Minnesota, 39.6 million people visit Bloomington each year, and compare that with some other cities in our nation, you can see that we have an opportunity with the people that are visiting our state and visiting our metro area, along with the density of population that exists in the metro area, and as well as the infrastructure, the transportation infrastructure that exists currently. The legislation would create the first real oversight system for casino gaming in the state of Minnesota. Strict mechanisms would be created to protect the integrity of the bidding process and ensure that the casino is operated in a completely above-board manner. The proposal adopts tried and tested oversight provisions from the gaming boards and commissions from states that have casinos or similar gaming. The first step, as I mentioned, would be to create the Minnesota Casino Gaming and Economic Development Corporation, whose board would be appointed by the governor. The current Division of Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement would oversee the background checks and updates on all persons involved in the operation of the casino. Under this proposal, the corporation would solicit bids from companies that already operate casinos in other states. Financial strength and clean records would be a primary consideration of that corporation. Under one potential proposal, and obviously there has to be a potential proposal to try to get some idea of what kind of revenues would be brought forward, a casino would be built on the site near the Mall of America in Bloomington. It would have 5,000 video slot machines, 150 game table games, and would employ 6,750 full-time union workers. A second part of what I am proposing, and that would be the flow chart, would be illustrated by the flow chart that's behind me and I believe is in your packet, is the creation of two sets of merit-based scholarships to be funded from the state's share of gaming revenues from that casino. At this point, the estimated revenue is taken from a 25% of the net operating revenues annually. That is obviously a negotiable proposal. It's projected by the year 2010 that two scholarship programs would be helping 100,000 students with college or technical studies at either the university, the MinsU campuses, or the private colleges in the state of Minnesota. And it is called the STAR Scholarship Program, and we have named it that because it's about students taking academic responsibility. Obviously, it's a merit scholarship program. It is about academic achievement. One of the scholarship programs would provide $10,000 for students who graduate from high schools with a B average and maintain that average through 4 years of college. The other scholarship program would provide up to $4,000 for students who graduate from Minnesota high schools with a C average and maintain a B average in their first year of a two-year technical program at a MinsU community or tech college. We call this the Tech Star Scholarship. The Tech Star Scholarship would prepare people for careers in areas where we badly need technical workers, such as licensed practical nurses, radiology technicians, surgical assistants, tool and die workers, mechanics, and many more people that are right now in workforce shortages in our state. Two out of every three Minnesota high school grad would qualify for one of these scholarships. This would help us to keep our student base in Minnesota and simultaneously improve the quality of our workforce. In addition to the scholarship program, Minnesota would obviously collect other taxes from workers' incomes, corporate income, hotel taxes, sales taxes, and other revenues that would be generated by the proposal. It's estimated about $118 million per year would go to the general fund from those sources. Okay, the question is why in the metro area, and I think I have touched a bit on that. I think it's important to mention, too, that Minnesota is right now the only state that has major gaming institutions that does not get a share of the gaming revenue. I want to show you this. I want to refer to this sheet in the packet that you have, and it's about the expenditures through 2006 of gaming revenues, 2006 to 2010. I hope all of these are in your packets. And I want to show you exactly the potential, because it's been estimated, first of all, based on an analysis that was done by a very reputable accounting firm, Ernst & Young, the revenue potential with the proposal that has been looked at would allow for approximately $250 million per year for scholarships. And that those dollars are transferred on this paper to show how in the first year, obviously, we wouldn't be using that full $250 million. So there is a balance for other projects that you see on, like, the fourth line. $149 million the first year is balance for other projects. Year there's a balance of $77 million for other projects. The third year there's a balance of $35 million for other projects. The fourth year is a balance of $4 million. When you add that to a potential licensing fee that's estimated here at $100 million, and which, by the way, is certainly a negotiable amount, we come up with $366 million in addition to the scholarship money that could be used for other projects. Now, I haven't worked with the Twins or the Vikings or any particular entity, but I think $366 million is a considerable amount of dollars. There's a lot of opportunities for doing good things for the state of Minnesota. And there's many needs in the state of Minnesota. I think the whole point of doing anything with a private entity having a casino is trying to do at least use revenue that's already being expended. It's already being, people are already gambling. This is not a new concept, but trying to at least garnish some of those earnings, some of percentage of those revenues to do good things, to provide good things to students, to seniors, to people in poverty. I mean, I am very willing to work with other entities to come up with other proposals for the $366 million that obviously is left here. Just, it's there. It's there. I think I've, Mr. Chairman, I believe I've completed at least giving you an explanation of the proposal. I apologize for not having language in front of you. I just want to say that, again, I don't think I'm alone in thinking that the time has come for us to do something. And I think there's an opportunity for us to do good things, many, many good things. And that's what the discussion should be about, is what good things can we do, not, you know, why wouldn't we establish opportunities? The discussion should be more of a proactive one.
Thank you.
I'm ready for questions.
Thank you, Representative Pedro. Do you have anyone to testify for your bill?
No.
Okay. Representative Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Boudreaux. Good presentation, and I appreciate your chart handout. As a member of the Education Committee and somebody passionate about education, as you're drafting your bill, this is just a comment, not a question, I would like you to consider increasing the TechStars required GPA on high school required classes to at least 3.0. I think the message we want to send to the state is to not necessarily be average, especially when we're they're competing for state scholarships for higher education. And I certainly want the message to be we want our electricians, we want everybody to have a great education and strive for excellence. So please even the playing field and be consistent, requiring high performance of all of our students, regardless of what they do post-secondary education or post-high school education.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Olson, thank you for at least supporting academic achievement. I think it's a component that we're lacking in the state of Minnesota at this point. The language regarding, I mean, as far as our scholarships, we do not encourage that. Our scholarships currently are needs-based, and by the way, we have one of the largest amounts of dollars in the nation as far as what we provide for need-based students, and that is about $140 million a year. This proposal would not touch or alter those need-based scholarships. It is actually a complement because it encourages people to achieve academically. You mentioned that we should not lower the standard to a C, but there's two components to the scholarship program, as I stated. One is the STAR program for B students. And we would also encourage them to take the ACT test so that we can manage the dollars. We do not expect that the fund balance would ever reach a deficit because we would be using the ACT scores to rank students should the funds be insufficient to cover all the scholarships. So the fund would never go bankrupt. And the language is already written on the education part of the proposal. So you can certainly look at that. But as far as allowing students who graduate with a C to go to a tech school, that is only a two-year scholarship, and they must maintain a B average once they attend the school, once they attend the higher ed facility, or their scholarship is discontinued. And that is the same with the STAR and the Tech STAR. You must maintain a B average. So if you have a C average, you may be still a good student, and you want to work hard and attend a tech college for a two-year degree in the areas where we need workforce professions, then you have to maintain a B average. So I think the achievement is there at a different incentive and a more limited one.
Follow-up, Representative Olson. Mm-hmm. Representative Rhodes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Boudreaux, couple of questions. First of all, I would assume that the schools they would go to would be in Minnesota. Is that
Mr.
your
Chairman,
plan?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Only for Minnesota schools.
And we could actually, I assume, when you have this kind of funding left over, could obviously go to the K-12 or pre-K-12 system to enhance the kids' education so they can get the scholarships. I mean, you're very flexible, I suspect, with the other remaining funds. Would that be fair to say?
Representative Droll.
Mr. Chairman, I'm very flexible with the remaining dollars. I think we can do a lot of good things with those dollars. There is a portion of the funding that I intend to allocate for career training, career resource centers in the high schools, so at least students will have the opportunity to review what profession is best suited to them so they can at least do some prep in high school before they help them think more about higher ed.
And Mr. Chairman, President Boudreaux, I think is it Georgia that has the same type of pattern, or is it another state?
Mr. Chairman, there are a number of other states that have established education programs with gaming revenue, and Georgia is one state that has done so. Some of the safeguards that we have in our bill is not in the Georgia plan to assure, first of all, that there's never a deficit, and some of the restrictions on at least who's eligible. We tried to follow at least the eligibility standards currently for higher ed. You must be a resident, though. You must be a resident here for 12 months to be eligible for the program.
And one other thing, Representative Olson kind of brought it up. They have to qualify, the way you have your plan is to qualify for the scholarship, they have to have a B average in high school for their 4 years, 3 years, or whatever that they have. But if they don't, they're on their own. Is that the deal? They have to have that de-average to qualify. You don't have a sliding...
Mr. Chairman, you're accurate in a portion of that. To get the four-year scholarship, the $10,000, you have to graduate with a GPA of approximately a B or better. To get the two-year in a limited $4,000, so it'd be not the $2,500 a year, but the $2,000 a year, you can graduate with a C, but then you must go into the areas, the professions that are established, and I'm working with the Department of Economic Development, their process for determining where the workforce shortage areas are. So it would be a process involving the local areas as well as the state to determine where our shortages are. So there would be established areas that the C students would be eligible to go to school for. And they would have scholarships, but they must maintain a B when they get in school. I know it's a little bit complicated, but the thread that goes through all of the programs is achievement. And you have to work hard to keep the scholarship.
Just one quick question, Mr. Chairman. It's not site-specific, so this necessarily may be in another location other than Bloomington. Is that that's fair to say?
Representative Bedrill.
Mr. Chairman, the specifics would be that the corporation would select a site that is the most workable and provides us for the best revenue. If we're going to do this, if we're going to establish a private casino or a casino that's state operated or whatever we decide to do, we have to pick, if it's only one, we have to pick the one that provides us with the best revenue. I mean, that would be my opinion of a corporation's decision. And I would expect that the corporation would make a decision that would select the best revenue option.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Haas. First of all, Representative Boudreaux, thank you for bringing this forth and using casino dollars in a very responsible way. Like Representative Olson, I would like to see the GPA of the Tech students increase to about 2.5, but that's going to be something we can debate as this bill moves along, and I understand your rationale. But would you talk a little bit more about the creation of the public corporation? Maybe I missed something, but I'm wondering if it's a corporation in which there can be investment from outsiders.
Representative Bedrill.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Erickson, at this time, I can't give you too much specifics. I can tell you that it is a public corporation. As far as outside investors, I don't think that's part of the current language, but again, I'd be very interested in hearing what your suggestion is.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Boudreaux, well, would outside investors include, for example, a Red Lake or White Earth Tribes? Because I noticed in one of your news releases you said you were open to working with them. Could that be a possibility?
Representative Boudreaux.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Erickson, option as far as the corporation goes, but as far as how the dollars would be used, how the revenue would be used, I'm very open to a discussion about that. I do have some ideas about that as well, how that would be used, and it's my opinion that if we're going to use dollars to help other people in other locations, it should be specifically designed to help those who are unable to help themselves and need, obviously, in a low poverty level, have social service needs. But I'm very willing to discussing that.
Thank you.
Representative Pearson, do you have a question?
I did. I have a couple of questions here. Okay. The first is, in the stuff we got, I didn't see any kind of pro formas or any. Is there any information that will support the notion that you're going to be able to generate these kind of revenues?
Representative Brown.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Thiessen, I only have an analysis. You're talking about proof of the revenue dollars, where it would come from?
On the casino side.
Yes. I have an assessment that's been done, and You know, it's an assessment that was done. I think I mentioned, if you were in the room, it's been done by Ernst & Young, and it is just an estimate of the potential revenue that would be available from one proposal, from one site. And that site, obviously, is in Bloomington. And it is, you know, there are other opportunities, but just that the research has only been done on one site. So an interested party did invest dollars in determining what potential revenue would exist, and I can give you that if you like.
Yeah, that'd be great. Okay. Yeah, I mean, not right now, obviously.
That'd okay. Well, I'll just say that the estimated total revenue, potential revenue, from in a 1 year period, is approximately $1.1 billion. Total revenue.
And yeah, a couple follow-ups on that. The assumption is near the Mall of America. What does that mean? How close to the Mall of America?
Depends on where you live in South Minneapolis. It by your house, it might work.
Well, obviously, Mr. Chairman and Representative Thiessen, you know, obviously, the entity that invested in this research is interested in a site adjacent to the Mall of America. It does not mean that proposal, you know, that as it would be determined by the public corporation, it doesn't mean that there is more leverage necessarily for that being the proposal that would be determined by the corporation, except for the revenue looks good. And maybe the revenue is good in a site away from the Mall of America, but as you saw from the tourist information that I called your attention to, there's significant tourism at that site, and there is an infrastructure of transportation that's workable, and so that is those are advantages that work for that site.
Yeah, and the reason for my question, thank you, Mr. Chair, was, you know, there's a lot of problems with airport noise over, not on the site, but nearby, and we've been working for years on figuring out ideas for redevelopment. Not that I would necessarily support that, I just want to get a sense of that. So, who is the entity? Can we say who the entity is that invested in this research?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Thiessen, Caesars Palace, or Caesars.
Okay. And then on the scholarships, if I may, Mr. Chair. I see that if you start out in, like, the class of 2006 is starting out with 30,000 scholarships, it looks like, and by 2010, kind of the end of the four-year period, you're down to 12,000. What's the drop-off? Why are you starting with 30,000 people? Are we assuming people are going to drop out or not going to maintain grade averages, or am I misunderstanding how those projections are working?
Oh, Representative Mr. Chairman, Representative Thiessen. No, we're actually estimating, you know, there'll be 60,000 graduates in the year 2006. So 30,000 of them would be eligible for the STAR scholarship, and I believe 10,000 would be eligible for the Tech STAR. So we've got 40,000 eligible in the class, and out of 60,000 in the class in 2006. But as you go down, you know, we have to account for continual, you know, and assuming some attrition, you have to account for how many would continue with their scholarships. So this isn't just an estimate based on those numbers of how many would continue to retain their scholarships. And, well, I believe your question was about the 10,000. That's just...
No, it was about the 30,000 going down 4 years later to 12,000. So you're actually estimating like about a 60% drop-off in the number of people, you know, 30,000 people start out with a scholarship their mm-hmm. freshman year. 4 years later, there's only going to be 12,000 left in school.
Perfect.
If you go down to 2009, 2010, the class of 2006, the estimate is 12,656.
Representative Bedreau, do you, in looking at that number, are you taking all the students that are in the college system now, they would become eligible that first year? So you're going to have some that are just starting college and some in their last year of college. Is that why that number's inflated?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Thiessen, this is based on about a 25% attrition rate. So assuming that 25% of those who are existing students Now, first of all, it's only for high school grads. It's not for those that would be in college. Just and then assuming a 25% attrition rate, that maybe they wouldn't maintain a B average, or they would choose not to continue, or whatever it would be.
So it's 25% after the first year, and then it's 25% of that lower number after the second year, and 25%, and that's how you get. Okay.
Yes. Yes.
And that's just an estimate that you.
It's an estimate, and Mr. Chairman, it's an estimate, Representative Thiessen, and you know, it. I guess at this point, it's all we have. Is you know, you could base it on a 10% attrition rate, or but looking at the current attrition in higher ed right now, I think this is a conservative figure.
Because attrition is greater than 25%?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Thiessen, I guess I don't want to say that, but this is a best guess with the scenarios we have today.
Mr. Chair, yeah, thank you. Is there any thought to given to, you know, we have, well, we've seen double-digit tuition increases in the state for, I don't know how many years running, but and projecting in the future. Is there any, you know, this 2,500 is going to become increasingly not that attractive a number. Is there any thought to tying this to kind of a tuition index or to increasing inflation or anything like that?
Representative Patrol.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Thiessen, you know, obviously that's a decision that can be made in the higher ed committee. I guess I don't have any opinion right now about that. I think the advantage of the $2,500 scholarship is if you're a student that it has low income, has needs as far as financial needs, you can also acquire the needs-based scholarship. So it's like a base of a scholarship. And what we heard in talking with the higher ed folks, particularly at the University of Minnesota, is that this is leveraging dollars for me to get, and this was a statement by an administrator there, that these are leveraging dollars. This will help us to get scholarships from either private businesses or other entities. So it's like an incentive, and they were excited about it, but obviously, you know, anyone would be excited about a new program for free scholarships that's based on working hard and achieving and not just based on income.
One more follow-up. Yeah, and you know, and I agree with that. I think that the idea of making college more accessible, you know, and encouraging people to work hard in school, it makes a lot of sense. And we talked a lot about, you know, possibly paying for K-12 education with some of these revenues, social service needs people have, helping the Red Lake and White Earth tribes. And I'm just wondering if, you know, and I think everybody here agrees that those are good things. I'm just wondering if people would also think maybe we ought to pay for some of those things and chip in together through taxes. And whether that's something that you would, you know, consider another option to accomplish some of these really good things that we've been talking about today.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative Thiessen, I don't know why I need to go to increasing taxes when we have an opportunity here to use dollars that are already being expended and would just provide the state with a portion of them and also provide some oversight that we do not currently have in our gaming system. This would be very heavily regulated. Obviously, it would have to be. There'd be always people checking to see if we have enough oversight, and I think that's a discussion for another day, but, you know, I think this is an opportunity that it is very exciting to me, especially with the component for higher ed, and my tech college, the folks there are pretty excited.
Well, I do want to thank you for because I think the idea, especially the scholarship idea, is a good one if some details are worked out. So I do want to thank you for bringing that forward. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have two questions, and I'll try and string them together as best I can. Representative Boudreau, question number one that came to my mind was brought to me by a teacher that I know who is, I would consider him extremely rigorous. He pushes his students to do their absolute best and maybe go a little beyond. He raised this issue to me that, quite honestly, this could lead to what he termed grade inflation. He gets a lot of calls from parents now saying, little Billy or little Janie has a 4.0 coming into your class. How on earth do you dare break that perfect record and give them a B? Or how can you possibly give my student a C? He sees this as a possibility that that could become the norm, that parents go to teachers saying, well, your C just cost my kid $2,500.
We hear it all the time.
Thank you for that. I think it's a legitimate concern that this will simply result in grade inflation. The teachers, maybe as a result of not wanting to have to listen to parents, or students, maybe they'll be more inclined to push that up to a B when really it should have been a C.
And Mr. Chairman and Representative Jacobson, I thank you for bringing that issue forward. We obviously thought about that and was a concern for us too, those of us working on this legislation. As we drafted the legislation for the higher ed program, as I mentioned, we are requiring that all students, all high school grads, take the ACT test. And remember, there's a limited pot of money. There's a limited pot of money. So if everybody's got a B or an A, there's still a limited pot of money. There's only $250 million a year. I mean, I know that's limited, but if everyone has a B, then they will be ranked by their ACT test scores. So we will be able to take the top scorers and the top 40,000 students. So I think it will actually encourage more competition on behalf of students striving to achieve, knowing that they're not eligible for need-based programs or need-based scholarships, which so many of our students are at that level. So I think it'll encourage achievement.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Boudreau. I had a feeling you'd have an answer for that one. That was probably more the easy one. The second concern I have, I'm going to stick again with the inflation issue. Looking at what I see, I have a serious concern that what will end up happening is going back to the rising tide lifts all boats theory, that suddenly the tuition costs just magically rise by the $2,500, resulting in about a wash to these students and a negative impact on maybe non-traditional students or other students that don't qualify for the program.
You have a question?
What do you see as far as, is there any way to mitigate that, or is that just a fact of the matter that you expect to happen anyway?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Jacobson, I think what you're expressing is a concern that tuition rates will jump. And I don't know if that's true. I think if you put in the inflation factor, I mean, that's one way of managing increased costs each year. But I think by keeping the scholarship at a particular figure, like $2,500, I think it actually encourages those institutions to compete for those students. And by offering, you know, by offering them specifics, if it were such that we set the tuition scholarships at whatever level the students, you know, they needed for a particular institution, I think that's where we would have a lack of competition. So right now, by having them set at one figure, I think students are able to, first of all, pretty much attend either a community college, a tech college, and have their tuition fully paid for. But if they choose to go somewhere else, they'd have to add additional dollars. And as you know, we all also have some very good deductions on our taxes for tuition that is paid per year. So, you know, I guess I don't understand particularly your concern.
Representative Jacobson, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Boudreau, the point I would probably try and make is that my expectation is the cost would rise to the point where it's going to cost the student the same as it would now. You raise the issue of competition as far as the schools go. You've got a captive audience. They know that student A can only go to X number of institutions within the state of Minnesota. You're competing against fellow Minnesota institutions for those same dollars, whether you get it or whether the college 30 miles down the road gets it. The money is the same. I don't really see the competition there at the school level.
Representative Kramer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I just wanted to speak in regards to the GPA again.
Okay.
Okay. This is really in regards to the people that are the 2.0. I guess I feel that there are some people out there that no matter how hard they try, they're never going to be able to attain a 3.0 or a 4.0. And so it would be better to look at people individually after that standard is set, because if you're a 2PO and 2PO, if you're a two grade average in high school, many times that same student would stay a 2.0 in technical school or whatever. So I would think that really should be looked at. That maybe this asking for these students to increase to a 3.0 may be a little unrealistic for some people.
Yeah. Representative Samerson, to that point, my grades were better in college than they were in high school. Mm-hmm. So under this scenario, I wouldn't have qualified coming out of high school with my, you know, with grades. But yet in college, my grades were considerably better. So,
Mr.
Chair, that is a valid question.
To that point, mine stayed pretty much the same all the way through.
Okay. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Haas.
Representative Boudreaux. No red mark.
Representative Boudreaux, I noticed that the costs for the Gaming Commission enforcement, that those have been, those are the same for every one of your school years. I think $5 million is the price tag for those. Do you think that those will remain the same? Is there something locked into your language that forces those to stay the same? And then my second question is, in regard to Representative Jacobson's question about the inflation factor, will you provide language that would allow the four-year balance for other projects to be used if you saw the need to raise the scholarship level?
Representative Boudreaux.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Erickson, first of all, the $5 million each year is just a best guess as far as what costs would be needed for, you know, establishing the commission and the enforcement.
So it could be high or it could be low, Mr. Chair.
It could be higher or lower, Representative Erickson. And as far as the other issue was the four-year balance and the other projects. I guess I'm not sure what you asked about that. But again, as I stated earlier, those are dollars that are kind of up for grabs now.
Okay. Thank you. But that's what I needed to know, Mr. Chair. So they could be used possibly to infuse into the STAR scholarship.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, I think your question was, would that scholarship be increased?
Yes.
At this point, it was my view and the view of others working on this that it would be best to provide as many scholarships to as many people as possible, just to encourage more people to get higher education and encourage more people to enter areas where we have workforce needs. And so by keeping it at $2,500 and $2,000 for the C students, it does ensure us that I believe two out of every three graduates would have a scholarship opportunity. And that was the priority. Certainly the numbers the amount of the scholarship can be changed. It's all based on the numbers of people, numbers of students that you want to affect. And I kind of like this number right now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Merkel, any closing remarks? Representative Solberg.
Sure. I'm sorry I was called out of the room for a while. But the state of Georgia, I think, had a somewhat similar type of program several years ago of state-sponsored
We discussed that earlier.
Oh, did you? Yes. I'm sorry. Okay.
No,
did you have testimony on its effectiveness?
We did not have any testimony.
Okay. I think that it would be interesting to have this committee or some committee also look at some of the reports of Georgia. I know that they instituted the program, but I think they also found that the person who's a C student, the one who that you want to try to have them become educated, that's our workforce, was kind of shut out of the system. And what it kind of said in the report is that those that have got the 3.0 or the 3.5 have got the scholarships anyway. They've got the financial resources or the ability through their ability to get their education, and sometimes it's those that are in the middle class and in the middle ones that are struggling along, the ones that we want to bring up that were. So it'd be interesting to get some reports on the Georgia problems.
And as we move on through this process, I'm sure we can get that. Okay. Representative Boudreaux, closing comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Solberg, I'm sorry that I missed, or you missed some of my information on that, but I wanted to just state that we did evaluate the Georgia program, and there were some differences. There are differences in the proposal here because there were some failings within the Georgia system, and this proposal will assure that the system does not go bankrupt, that there's always scholarship dollars by ranking students with their ACT tests to assure that if there's a shortage of funds, we will never be bankrupt, we will never be in a deficit. It also does deal with the C student. The Tech Star program, as I mentioned, is for the C students, and it is for designed for those areas where we have workforce needs. So there are two components, and that's somewhat in that flow chart that you have in your hand there. But as far as did you have another comment?
Mr. Chairman, I would also be interested in how many students attend the University of Minnesota that are at least receiving a scholarship of some type from the mineral tax, taconite production tax, and under the, not the taconite production tax, but the University of Minnesota Permanent School Fund that's funded from taconite royalties. It's a sizable amount. Something like a fourth of the students who attend the University of Minnesota are receiving a scholarship from that fund.
Okay. Representative Boudreaux, final comment.
Mr. Chairman, I would just again thank you for the opportunity to present some new ideas, some new concepts. I do think that the majority of Minnesotans are ready to endorse a measure, a measure on gaming that is different from our existing system. And I do think that in doing so, our oversight and our regulation will be, at least it will exist, and it will also be improved. And I just thank you for this opportunity, and I look forward to working with all of you.
Thank you very much. Members, since Representative Rhodes said I can't chair the meeting during my presentation, he's going to chair the balance of the meeting for the day. So,
okay,
here we go. Representative Rhodes.
Moving right along, Representative Abler, you have a bill before us. I think that's next on our agenda, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Welcome to our committee.
I don't know.
Okay.
We're gathering our
a lot of chairs there, but you're all by yourself. So
I feel lonely, Mr. Chair. I think I'll be joined soon by at least three people, and there's others in the audience.
Why don't you go ahead and start that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You got a half hour.
And for our
presentation.
Thank you. And I believe that you should have one of these. Members have these there. No. You soon will if you don't.
I don't know. Do we have those? Hold that up one more time. Jared? No, we don't.
It's a 50-50 chance you have on these, Mr. Chair.
Well,
are these around?
Tell you why I take bets on the side.
Yeah. Okay.
Odd or even. There you go. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the, and I realize this is an informational hearing and there's no voting going on today. And I appreciate the chance to bring this bill forward. I do want to offer members the good news that this is not does not involve Bloomington or the Mall of America, and you won't have to discuss that today anymore. That was supposed to be a joke, so you better. That's as good as they get. But anyway,
Anoka County.
Pardon?
It's in Anoka.
It's Anoka County, Mr. Chair. That's right. Far away from Bloomington and the Mall of America. That's the county. Okay, yeah.
Ooh. I don't have to press.
Yeah,
hold on.
This is real casual. Just keep pulling up more chairs.
It is.
Pretty soon we'll sit over there and you can sit over
here. Mr. Speaker, we're doubling down even as we talk.
All right. All these people
Mr. Chairman,
in here for 3 hours. Yes, Representative Boudreaux.
These materials are very, very cold. I hope that doesn't reflect the proposal.
Now you're even for his comments on the motion.
This will warm your heart, Mr. Chair.
All right.
So, to move on, the whole topic of horse racing has been around for a good long time, but recently advanced by the movie Seabiscuit, which actually caught the heart of my wife, which kind of promoted me to be interested in this topic as well, even more than I was. And we've enjoyed watching horse racing in Canterbury. And my son has had boxing matches there. And it's been a very positive situation for my family. And, you know, that's an important thing for me. The opportunity to have such a similar venue in the north half of town where I actually could get to it stirred my interest when I first heard about this proposal. And this, Mr. Chair, is a proposal for harness racing, not for around the track racing, but it's more of a drag race. But and what you have is the
just say Dan Patton to get the idea. Those of us that are old enough to get the idea. Some of the young ones probably don't even know who Dan Patch was.
Anyway, in brief, Mr. Chair, I'm going to be just offer about a minute of thought, and then I'll turn it over to my witnesses who have a lot of substance to offer you. There will be an amendment forthcoming when this gets to your committee for real. It's still in a draft form, and it's not prepared yet to be distributed, but it was observed that the card club and the simulcast in the first year was neglected to be in the original draft, so that'll be coming. The current law, Mr. Speaker, or Mr. Chair and members, allows for two racetracks in the state already, and the Racing Commission is in charge of that. The shortest version of this whole bill is that allows the level playing field for either of those tracks to succeed. Your committee is well versed. I won't bother to rehearse the challenges of making a racetrack be profitable, which is the reason that you do it. But you are, and you're also aware, so that this is, these components are important for this. You'll hear about a very well thought through proposal that's been embraced by the local city and township officials and by the Anoka County Board. And just to tell you, this bill has been out now for 11 months. I have not had one negative come back to me from the entire region. Only positives, and there's been quite a number of those. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll turn it over to my testifiers who identify themselves and provide
great
information.
Welcome to our committee as you're firing up your computer. I assume you're first up? Or
no, I'm not.
Oh, okay. Who's talking first? Jeff, is that you going to start?
Sit there and then pull the mic.
For those of you who haven't done it before, you get to identify yourself because it's being taped and then just proceed. Go ahead. It's all yours.
Get my glasses on. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Halpern. I'm chairman of the board and CEO of Southwest Casino and Hotel Corporation, and we are the sponsor of the North Metro Harness Initiative. Thank you very much for permitting us. Can you hear okay? Does that work?
Yeah, we're doing fine. We're just looking at family pictures there.
Okay. That's his granddaughter.
That's good.
Thank you for the opportunity of permitting us to appear before the committee today. I'd like to take this opportunity to briefly provide you with some background about what our team is all about and our company, because I think it's important who's involved in this project because of the nature of the project. First, I'd like to introduce my partner and president, Jim Druck, and also our other partner, Tom Fox, who's our CFO. They'll be presenting a PowerPoint presentation as soon as I'm finished with the introductions. Also would like to introduce Kerry Banks.
Kerry?
Kerry Banks is the son of Ron Banks, who's the president of the Minnesota Harness Association, and also Greg Budak.
Greg?
And Greg is the secretary treasurer. They've been extremely supportive, and I'll get to the importance to them of our project and legislation and so on. We appreciate your being here, both of you. By way of background, you should know that we're Minnesota people. My partner Jim Gluck and I went to school in Minnesota, practiced law here. Jim developed downtown Bloomington, did a lot of projects. We've been here for all of our professional lives. Our partner Tom Fox was CFO. Our CFO was a CPA, worked with us for many years. So we're not casual interlopers. We're Minnesota people doing the Minnesota project. It's also important to note that our company is funded by Minnesota people, essentially. It is a Minnesota venture. We've also had a long tradition in the horse area. My partner, Jim Druck, was extremely active in Canterbury, chaired the Festival of Champions, was involved in all the evolutionary stages of Canterbury, slots of Canterbury, Save the Twins, etc. So there's been a long history. He also was a thoroughbred person, had a farm, raised, etc. The horse side for me was saddlebreds with my family, and I was involved in that area for 15 years and had a chance to enjoy the north suburbs where we had layup facilities for our horses and so on. I think it's important to note that this company is truly dedicated to the advancement of harness racing, to the creation of a fine facility that will be supportive of that industry. In terms of our gaming background, we have been licensed federally, state, tribally, with a number of projects. We have an experienced team of folks that are experienced in the harness area, cards, gaming, food service, etc. This is our first Minnesota project. Our other projects are out state, Oklahoma, Colorado, etc. And it's really fun to be home and have an opportunity to do something in our own jurisdiction. Our project is a privately financed project. As Representative Aver indicated, we are statutorily authorized in terms of our entity. There are two tracks that are authorized in the seven county area. There are a number of requirements that we meet or exceed. One very important one is there's a 20-mile distance factor. You're supposed to be 20 miles apart from the existing thoroughbred facility. The proposed facility in Columbus Township, where we've been working so hard on, is 49 miles away. It is a different marketplace, a different area. We filed our license application with the Minnesota Racing Association, Minnesota Racing Commission, on December 23rd, and that's being processed. I think it's important to note that the harness breed has truly been underserved in this area. As the representatives here can tell you, it's primarily a family sport. It's different than the thoroughbred area. Unfortunately, there's no venue to race harness horses in this state except county fairs. They're forced to go to Iowa, generate revenue elsewhere, if you will. There are people as far as Michigan that would come to this area if we had the right facility, a fine facility. There's been no benefit from the harness area, and we think that this facility would be a great service and would bring the harness breed back to this area and also bring back other participants from other areas. We also are in an underserved area. We are part of Anoka County. Our site is in Columbus Township in Anoka County, and we've received extremely warm, wonderful responses there. This project will generate taxes, jobs close to home, growth of the harness breed,
agri-product sales, layup facilities, and a whole potpourri of related benefits. We received strong support from Columbus Township. We've already passed preliminary planning and township stages. We're involved in environmental, and that's moving very, very well. Anoka County has been obviously firmly behind us, North Metro Mayors Association, Chamber of Commerce, and all the adjacent municipalities. We think this project is way overdue. It's legally authorized. We'll provide substantial returns, as my partners will indicate through a PowerPoint demonstration soon. And most important, we'll provide great benefit and revenues for the northern suburbs, northern metro, Columbus Township, Anoka County, and ultimately the state of Minnesota. With that background, I'm happy to turn this over to my partner, Tom Fox, who will take you through a PowerPoint presentation, and we'll go from there. Tom?
Hi, welcome to our committee.
Thank you. My name is Tom Fox. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for Southwest Casino and Hotel Corp. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, what I'd like to do is talk a little bit about harness racing. As we started this project, we found that there were actually a lot of people who didn't know about harness racing. And it's one of the more historic forms of equine racing that exists. It's been around for many, many years. And the horses actually travel at speeds up to 30 miles an hour. Some of the horse people here could talk about that. But it's actually a very exciting form of racing. What I've got here for you, just a second, is this is some footage from the. You don't have any sound, but
can
this
we
is
place
footage.
Our bets?
Actually, this is at the Goodhue County Fair in Cannon Falls, and as you'll see, there's no betting, but there's plenty of people in the stands. Enjoying the races, and I think it'll be an exciting kind of county fair atmosphere that we're going to bring to Minnesota. It's just a lot of fun, and people were there just to watch the horses. And the other interesting thing is that it isn't just your jockeys that run these horses. It's also this fellow here, I think, is 80 years old. Am I correct in that? Late 60s. Yeah, and he's still racing. So.
Yeah. Be careful here.
But basically, it's a family sport. People raise their own horses. They run their own horses. And unfortunately, today there's no true venue in Minnesota for them to run horses, to participate in this sport. So we think that we're excited about having them come, of having this park. And again, our goal is to have a county fair atmosphere, and to truly attract a different type of entertainment that has been lost in Minnesota. Used to be held at the state fair, no longer have that. What we're going to be offering is 50 days of live racing, primarily May through September. Simulcasting. We also will have a card room offering poker and other games. A restaurant for approximately 200 people. And the grandstand will have a capacity of about 1,400 people and parking for 1,000 to 1,200 vehicles. This is the current phase one plan that we believe is in accordance with the current law, which allows the second track in Minnesota. The construction of the facility will be about $10 million. The total project cost is between $25 and $30 million. We expect attendance of about 7,000 people per week. We should create over 300 jobs with a yearly payroll of $7.9 million. We expect expenditures with local vendors to range to be about $9 million, and we will provide community revenue in the form of property sales and income tax. We expect that our project will cause other expansion in the area, restaurants, gas stations, hotels, etc. It should also help increase property values with the additional employment. We expect that we will also start to increase the agricultural business around the area. We believe that the standard breads are right now, there's a very small group of them, but if we have a track where they have 50 days of racing that they know is in the area, we expect that that business will increase and you will see a growth in the standard bred horsing industry. We have, as Jeff mentioned, we have support from Columbus Township. We've got a concept approval from them of, yes, we'd like a racetrack in our community. Anoka County Board of Commissioners passed a resolution supporting our program. North Metro Mayors, the North Metro Chamber of Commerce, Connexus Energy has said that they are excited about us coming into the community. Right now, we have the site under control. We've done our environmental worksheet, and we're in the process of taking that through the township board. We've filed our application, as Jeff mentioned, with the Racing Commission, and we've secured debt and equity financing. This is just kind of a picture of where the facility sits. It's basically where 35E and 35W come together. And at Highway 9723, our site is right off of there, just north of the old Trout Air site, if anybody's familiar with that. And that will be the location of our facility. This is just a rendering of what the current facility plan for this location will look like.
We got a question for you,
Mr. Chairman. Related to the site, I went by there. Isn't there a new Gander Mountain in that site as well?
Yes. Where, just south of our site, along the freeway, there is the Gander Mountain.
Okay.
Site.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. As I say, this is a conceptual drawing of what the current site would look like. If we're successful in getting the bill passed and get the constitutional amendment approved, the site would grow to something like this. We would actually increase. We would have a casino facility with room for 2,500 slot machines. And of course, we would expand the racing opportunity. A project like this is a conceptual drawing of what the expanded grandstand would look like. The total project cost would now reach $200 million. We would create 1,500 new jobs, and our yearly payroll would be $35 million. Other expenditures close to $40 million in the community. We believe that our bill would produce state gaming revenues of $77 million a year, real estate taxes of $4 million, county and city taxes. We've got a provision to provide the county and city with direct tax subsidy out of our program, $2.8 million, and we would set aside $2.8 million for gambling addiction awareness. That, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, is the presentation on our program.
Did you want to say something? Otherwise, I have a question. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Jim Druck. I'm the president of Southwest Casino. And I just wanted to clarify exactly what we are asking in our bill. First of all, we are asking for a privately owned casino to be authorized by a constitutional amendment that would authorize casino gaming. A racino was the term of art coined last year at Minnesota racetracks, which would include Canterbury and our North Metro track. And we are also asking for two very minor modifications to current law. At the present time, the card club legislation requires that the card club be in operation 50 days before that horse racing exists for 50 days before a card club is permitted to operate. And that creates a burden in the first year of operations on the horsemen, because it is the card club revenues at our facility as well as Canterbury that creates the source of purse revenue to generate quality racing. So we're asking that in the first year of our operation, our card club can operate simultaneously with the horse racing. The second thing that we are asking for is, under current law, the you are only permitted to simulcast the breed that you run, which would mean that we could not show the Kentucky Derby, we could not show $1 million quarter horse race that comes out of Ruidoso Downs and other things at our facility, and we're asking for relief in that provision. That also generates significant revenues for purse money for the horsemen.
Representative Abler, the county and the city is going to get $2.8 million. Is that because they have to provide extra police and fire and that type of thing? Or are the residents of your county going to see additional money that they'll be able to have to make up to do other things with, I guess?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Questions? Oh, Representative Newman, the first question of your legislative career.
It better be good.
Maybe I should withdraw.
Well, you know, I thought there was a thing, rookies should be seen and not heard, but go ahead, give it a whirl.
Let me take a shot. Mr. Chairman, directed to Mr. Fox, what would your best estimate of the annual net profit be to the private owner of this casino?
Assuming that it under our proposal, Jim, maybe you could take that. Under our proposal, assuming the constitutional amendment and assuming this tax structure, I believe it's $35 million.
Actually, we show about a $70 million gross profit, out of which we would have debt service and facility costs and other things. So we would. We would show a net profit of significantly less than that, but we expect it to be a profitable venture, and we expect to have a sufficient return on our $200 million investment.
Yes,
just a follow-up question then. Would it be fair to say that the adjusted gross profit then to the private owner of the casino would be about $70 million a year?
Mr. Trent?
Yes, before debt service, before other charges, income taxes, other charges.
Thank you.
Excellent. Good question. Very good. All right. Representative Stolberg.
A follow-up on that. That is excluding the prizes or the horse racing purses, right?
No, that will have already been deducted.
That's okay. Excluding.
Yes.
Representative Sanderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure who fields the question, but I'm just going to throw the question out. Does looking at this option delete the Racino from the Canterbury Downs place?
Mr. Chuck?
In other words, would you be back next year to say let's have a Racino down at Canterbury, even if this was improved?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative, our bill provides for a Racino at both racetracks, so it's not exclusive to our
is the same discussion about both.
Okay.
So you would have, if you had slots, they would be the state lottery would be involved in the slots, and if the property was ever sold, the slots go back to the remain part of the state. I believe at the Canterbury, if I'm correct, the Canterbury slots, if Canterbury is sold, the slots don't go with the sale. I believe that's the way we passed it. So would that be the same as yours then?
Our bill is different than that. Our bill provides for private ownership and state regulation over that ownership. We are not. Our bill does not call for a lottery-based casino operation, but rather privately owned and operated taxed and regulated.
Okay, so we're talking about revenue generated for the state of Minnesota off your facility of $77 million a year. Is that correct?
Yeah, at a minimum, yes.
Okay.
That's for the state.
Okay, I understand that. Representative Thiessen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to follow up a little bit on some of those, this line of questioning. If the proposed constitutional amendment fails, would you still go forward with the proposal just to have a harness track up there?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes, we are well down the road to proceed with that and intend to proceed. We have filed our application with the Minnesota Racing Commission. We are working our way through the local zoning process. They have embraced us, and we hope for a licensing to be completed this spring or summer, and a construction start this summer.
And just so I'm clear, and to do all that, you don't need us to do anything except for those minor changes you mentioned.
Yes, that's correct. The minor changes make the operation much more viable and acceptable for the local horse industry.
The minor changes being the simulcast changes.
Simulcasting and commencing card club operations contemporaneous with rather than after 50 days of live racing.
Can I follow up?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, thank you. Have you done any calculations or pro formas on kind of what your profits would be in that setting without the casino?
Yes, we have.
What do those numbers look like?
Vastly less than that, but sufficient.
Okay.
Sufficient as in, well, I guess the issue becomes, my understanding is that if we don't do anything and you get approval, you're going to have a harness track out there with a card club, because that's part of the deal, and no slots at this point, and you'd just be up and running in the VR operation, and the revenue that we would generate as a state would just be your regular taxes and all that other stuff like we do now. Your purses would be enhanced because you have the card club revenue to like Canterbury. Is that so? It'd be basically a Canterbury in a 49 miles away type of operation without any legislation passed once you get approved. Is that, Mr. Druck, is that fair to say?
Exactly. And we will have harness racing on a shorter track rather than the thoroughbred and quarter horse racing that exists at Canterbury. So it's a more family-oriented venture, and it appeals to a different audience.
The question would be, if I may just a second, Mr. Williams, if Racino that has passed the House passes the Senate and would provide slots, provided with the lottery being maintenance or the supervision of, would they automatically get slots too, or is that a different deal?
Mr. Chairman, the way that the bill that passed the House is worded, the only entity that could have a contract with the state to host state-operated gaming machines would be one that was operating as a racetrack in 1990.
Okay, so therefore that's why the legislation that you have then would be, it would be either adding slots through legislatively or casino through a constitutional amendment. Is that kind of what the direction we're going, Representative Abler?
Yes, thank you. You're exactly right, Mr. Chair, and there's two other features that just to clarify for members what the needs are. Current law would allow this harness track to go forward as you suggested. After a year, they'd be allowed to have a card club pretty much. In a year or two, that's when the card club could come in. That would hamper the purses in the first year, which is the concern. The second element is the simulcast is not allowed. They could do harness racing simulcasting under current law, which I understand is not as desirable of a simulcast opportunity as is watching thoroughbred racing, and that's the second feature. Without this bill, there would not be simulcast of the thoroughbred racing allowed at this track ever. Mm-hmm. So they just understand what we're asking for.
That's good. President Silver?
Oh, no, go ahead, Paul.
Can I just follow up
go ahead.
That? I on terms of state taxes in the non-casino setting, do you have any estimates on what those revenues would be?
I don't have that off the top of my head. They're normal.
Okay. Basically, we would be paying normal income taxes. Real estate taxes are estimated about $500,000, and so the income, I mean, our income taxes would be state income taxes, just like any other hopefully profitable operation in Minnesota.
There is also a parimutuel tax that we pay of 6.9%. I don't have that number in the top of my head, but I can, if it's important, I believe I can dig it out.
Thank you. That's fine.
Any other questions? Representative Silver.
Mr. Chairman, this is probably to Mr. Williams. Refresh my memory on the constitutional difficulty on parimutuel betting off track. If you were to, I remember there was a court case on it, and
Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, the Constitution allows the legislature to authorize and tax on-track parimutuel betting on horse racing. In 1991, the legislature passed a bill that legalized off-track betting by trying to define off-track betting as if it were really on-track betting. That bill was declared unconstitutional by the Supreme Court in 1992 on the grounds that the voters in 1982 authorized only on-track parimutuel betting and that the wording of that constitutional amendment would preclude off-track betting.
Well, Mr. Chairman, my point of clarification is if you had a harness track under the Constitution, not the statute, but Constitution, if you had harness track facility, could you not have regular horse betting at that particular provision, parimutuel, simulcast, as it's a horse racing?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, under the Constitution, there is nothing in the Constitution that would prohibit authorization of a second racetrack in the metropolitan area offering on-track betting on harness racing, and the legislature has gone on the assumption that on-track betting includes betting on simulcast races conducted elsewhere. So there is nothing in the Constitution that would preclude nothing in the constitutional provision on parimutuel betting that would preclude legislation of this type.
Mr. Chairman, point of clarification, maybe I didn't ask the question right. If they had horse racing that was harness racing, at this, could they then have, under the Constitution, simulcast betting on regular horse racing?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, there would be nothing in the Constitution that would prohibit that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Yes, Mr. Drug.
I can answer this. Mr. Chairman, I can answer the question on the parimutuel taxes. If we have simulcasting of only harness racing, the parimutuel taxes will be in the range of $1 million a year. And if we have all breeds simulcasting, the parimutuel taxes will be in the range of $2 million a year.
Representative Thiessen, you done?
Yeah, no, Representative Thiessen. Just to follow up on Mr. And I think this is for Mr. Williams again as well, or maybe someone, but just to follow up on Representative Silver's question, what was the rationale for limiting the racing to the type of, or that simulcast to the type of breed of racing? There must be some restriction on that if you want to change it, I'm assuming.
Mr. Chairman, the restriction is in statute. It was a legislative decision, not influenced by the wording of the Constitution. My recollection of the debate, and there may be people in the room who have a clearer recollection of it than I do, was to ensure that the majority breed would be able to have substantial control over simulcasting at the racetrack in which they ran.
Any other
Yeah, Representative Baylor.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to offer another witness, just since we've kind of, I think, worked this over pretty well. Carrie Banks is with the Harness Association. I just wanted to say hello and offer a thought.
Well, welcome to our committee. Just identify yourself and go ahead.
Yeah, my name is Carrie Banks. I just wanted to give maybe a little different perspective. I've been involved in the harness racing business my whole life. My dad is the president of the Minnesota Harness Racing Association. We've had horses my whole life.
You ever drive one of those things?
Oh, yeah, many times. It's a lot of fun, too. And we used to go all over the state. You know, I raced at all the county fairs, and now it's, you know, a lot of them have kind of gone by the wayside, and you know, it's we're having to travel long ways to, you know, to find places to race. And now I've got two sons of my own that they love the horses, and we have uncles and cousins that are involved in it, and it's a lot of fun. And it's like everybody's saying, it's really family oriented. It's really exciting, and I think it's a good idea, I think.
It's just a question on procedure, Representative Abler. Your bill is subject to everything falling into place. Is that so? Once you get the license, you're going to operate your track, and then with whatever changes you need to get done, and then the slots and all that other stuff comes through a constitutional amendment after the fact. And so each thing has to fall in place for this thing to work. Is that basically what it boils down to? They get their license, they're going to be able to operate the track right now, whatever, or when they get it up and running, and then the next step would be the constitutional amendment. So this is over a period of a couple of years, I suspect. Is that right?
That's correct, Mr. I'm not sure where they plan to go. This is kind of a simulcast in terms of pushing each little part in a parallel way. I don't know what year they intend to open. They'd be open for next season. That's right.
So
if they get the racing commission could
open,
vote.
If by the racing commission, you have a grand opening next summer, then is that kind of the plan?
A year from summer.
In 2005
or 2006? We, Mr. Chairman, our hope is that we can be under construction this summer. And if that's the case, we would be open for in 2005.
Okay. Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, just another question. Does that timetable mean that you need to have the card club in place? Did I understand right that the card club is out of
They have to have, race? Right now they'd have to have, correct me if I'm wrong, 50 some days of racing before they can put the card club in, unless okay. We make a change in law to say that they can be this.
That's what I'm asking. Is that construction right? We mean you have to have that law changed,
Mr. Drick?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, it is far better for our industry to have the minor change that we are asking for in place at this time.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, Representative Hilty, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question to whichever of the partners wants to answer. Do you have any business association with the operators of Canterbury?
Not at the present time. I was a very, very active thoroughbred horseman, had a farm, stood a stallion, raced out there, and was active in the Mr. Chairman, I apologize, Representative.
That's fine.
I was an active thoroughbred horseman, and I was active at the legislature through many of those years on many of the bills that you so graciously considered. And I was of assistance. I did the business plan for slots at Canterbury to save the Minnesota Twins, and I assisted them in the business plan for their card room. But I happen to be a shareholder because their company is publicly traded. But I have no other. We have, as a group, no other affiliation with it. And Kurt and Randy Sampson are minor shareholders in our company.
Thank you.
We have 350 shareholders. And they have a, it was a very, very small investment they made a long time ago.
Okay. And any other comments before we move on? Thank you very much for coming. Appreciate it. Representative Abor, anything else?
No, I just want to thank you for your time and attention.
All right. Thank you. You're up. It's our pleasure. Okay, our final presentation today is Representative Haas's bill, which is, I'll give a minute to clear the area here, I guess.
No.
Where's this bill? Yes, Scott was sworn in. I think the governor. In the governor's office.
Yeah, I've been.
I think he's going to put in a blue slip for today, so I assume he's on.
I'm going to walk.
Well,
that's what I'm concerned about. He doesn't know about it.
He doesn't.
No, you don't want to know about it.
That was the idea.
Until you mentioned it, you know,
the idea.
I should have given you a dirty one.
If you do, I do.
Well, I want those rural people to be seated there. No, maybe I don't want to be seated there.
Oh, jeez. Okay. You ready, Bill?
I'm ready.
Okay. This is pretty much, I think, I don't know if there's any difference. There should be a brochure at your, it's a new draft. The draft is in your packet and your brochures. Chairman Haas, it's all yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. What we have today, we talked about it last year, but this issue is so important that we really need to discuss this bill and go forward. You know, when you look back at the history of Indian gaming, one of the biggest complaints that I have received, and I think every member of this body has received, is the fact that the state of Minnesota does not receive any direct revenues from Indian gaming. And the White Earth and Red Lake Band of Indians have a proposal that develops a partnership between the state of Minnesota, the citizens of Minnesota, and the bands of White Earth and Red Lake. We will become partners in building a casino and generating revenue from that source that we've heard a lot of discussion about today as we move forward with these proposals. You've heard Representative Sober, you were talking about northern Minnesota, you know, how can we get a high-speed train to take people up to a stadium in Grand Rapids, you know, and Red Lake. How do we get money up there? How do we generate economic development? How does the state participate in this, and how can we help the different needs of the state? You know, we have health and human services, we have roads, we have education. We have a lot of needs in the state, and we need revenue for it. And the proposal that we have before you today addresses all those needs. Over the summer, I had the opportunity to tour both reservations, and there is a great need up there for economic development and vitality in those two reservations. And this bill will do that. When you look at what this bill will do for Minnesota, if you look at the other proposals that we've talked about today, they're all private corporations. Where does that money go after the state gets their small portion? It goes out of state in most cases. It does not stay in Minnesota. The money that's generated through this casino proposal, 100% of it, stays in Minnesota. It gets returned to the state of Minnesota in our share, and the balance goes to the two reservations, which they will use to develop jobs, provide housing, economic development, and growth to not only the reservations, but Representative Sober, you were talking about bringing, you know, helping businesses in northern Minnesota. The influx of money to these two reservations will also help the local economies in all the small towns up in the northern part of Minnesota, because they will also participate in increased revenues and sales as things are being built and developed on these reservations. That money will be reinvested into the local economy, and everybody wins. So we get state tax dollars, we get a state portion, we get sales tax, we got income tax, we got property tax collections, we got reinvestment into our local communities, which they will have increased taxes the state will benefit from because of their growth in business and things like that. The other unique part about this proposal, you know, the governor has talked about jobs. We've got to get more jobs in the state. We can't have a loss of jobs in the state. We've got to develop new jobs. This proposal will be developing new jobs, and the unique part about it is about 75% of these jobs will be for minority members in the Minneapolis and St. Paul communities. This is a jobs program for them. This is going to take people who are on welfare and in poverty right now. You know, we know the neighborhoods where these people live. We're taking them out of poverty. We're giving them jobs. We're giving them self-esteem. We're turning these people into taxpayers and responsible citizens who are going to have pride in what they're doing now, that they're earning a living. And this is an opportunity for those people that can't find jobs, who are down and out, and who are on welfare, to move forward and have hope and opportunity. That's the proposal that we're bringing forward today. You know, in this proposal, the state of Minnesota will, through the lottery, provide the slot machines that we will be using in the casino, and the lottery will maintain them. They'll police them, and they'll police them. And as the years go on, we'll continue to work with the lottery to replace the machines, because you have to do that in an operation to stay competitive with the games. The state of Minnesota receives 20% as their take of the profits from the casino. Of that 20%, and the reason why we're at 20% is there's additional, within that 20%, we're being reimbursed for subsidies that we're giving those two reservations now. So we're freeing up money in our budget, our existing budget, because we're not going to have to cover those costs anymore, because the money from the casino will be helping us out. That provides, you know, self-sufficiency for the reservations. The proposal would also set up an advisory board that would work on the issues of Indian gaming and how to run the casino and future problems or needs that come up. They'll work with the lottery to and the people that are appointed to the board to resolve any issues that come up, to take care of any problems, and to work on future plans for this casino. So I think that's a new addition to the bill, and I think that is a positive move for this bill. But members, instead of I continue to talk about this, I think it would be best to hear from a few members of the band. I have Daryl Sickey here, who is the chair of the Red Lake Band. Pardon? Oh, he's tribal treasurer. I'm sorry. I gave you a promotion now. Come on, take it. We had a little coup. You didn't know about that, did you? And then I have Andy Favorite, who is from the White Earth Reservation. He's the chair of their housing board. So, Daryl, if you'd introduce yourself.
Hi, Daryl. Thanks very much, and welcome to our committee. Why don't you just introduce yourself and go ahead and
take your presentation. My name is Daryl Sickey, Senior Tribal Treasurer for Red Lake. Good morning, Chairman Rhodes and members. I have a tendency to my voice to be too loud at times, so I'll try. And one of my colleagues told me to kind of lower it a little bit, but I don't want to put you guys to sleep either. So I'm going to read my testimony to this Joint House Committee, and I want to thank you for giving me this opportunity. It is a pleasure to once again to appear before these two committees of the Minnesota House of Representatives. I'm honored to have Chairman House seated here next to me to talk to you about an issue that is very important to the 9,600 enrolled Red Lake Tribal members living on reservation and off reservation. It is also an honor to have the support and leadership of Chairman House for the Minnesota Gaming Equity Act. I am the elected Tribal Treasurer of Red Lake Nation Tribal Council. Red Lake members living on a reservation, which is a 5-hour drive from where we are sitting right now, have for generations suffered the indignities of poverty and unemployment. Unfortunately, the small casino operations that our tribe has created do not alleviate the poverty experienced by our people. Because of that fact, I'm here before you to once again to urge you to consider passage of the Minnesota Gaming Equity Act during the 2004 legislative session. When Indian gaming was created in Minnesota across the United States in the mid-1980s, it was seen as an economic development tool for the Native American nations, 11 of whom are located in Minnesota. While it has brought a measure of economic development to each tribe, it has created for a few tribes much more success than for the majority. Not surprisingly, the tribes with casinos closer to the metropolitan area of Minneapolis-St. Paul are the most successful operation. This has created a massive inequity in the state of gaming in Minnesota. The legislation before you today, the Minnesota Gaming Equity Act, attempts to address the inequity in the current gaming market in Minnesota. The Minnesota Gaming Equity Act creates a partnership between the Red Lake, White Earth, Indian Nations, and the state of Minnesota to allow them to compete the gaming market of the Twin Cities area. The revenue generated by the state tribal casino would allow our two nations to alleviate some of the pressing social problems we are faced with, such as in Red Lake. Unemployment at Red Lake Reservation is at 60%. A year ago, when I spoke to you, it was at 50%. 600 tribal members are on waiting list for tribal housing. A year ago, when I presented, we had 400 on a waiting list. For example, 21 family members live in one hostel, a three-bedroom, and some of them are from 10 to 18 that live in one-bedroom, two-bedroom hostel. And 740 members are on an MFIP. 500 members are on food stamps. 300 on the commodity food program. Law enforcement on Red Lake Reservation faces tremendous challenges from drug dealers, gang members, and is annually underfunded to address these challenges. Tribal court, fire department are in essential programs. They are also severely underfunded. Remember, a year ago, the state of Minnesota was in millions of dollars in shortfall. Red Lake Nation received budget cuts in our social program. The stats I just identified to you as continuing issues at our reservation before gaming existed and after gaming was created. For tribal members living off the reservation, many in the Twin Cities, the stats are not much better. Poverty, chemical dependency, housing, health care, and unemployment are a staple of many of their lives. In fact, many of our reservation members have moved back to the reservation in the last 5 years to be able to continue on welfare, perpetuating the lifestyle of dependency. This has caused even greater difficulties for our tribal government to be able to address the needs of our tribal members due to lack of funds. When gaming was created, Indian gaming was meant to provide the revenue to address some of these problems. However, as they say in real estate, location, location, location is what matters. And 5 to 6 hours away from where a majority of the gaming customers live, Red Lake and White Earth do not have the location necessary to be rewarded on these revenues. I view the Gaming Equity Act as fulfilling the original intent of Indian gaming in the state, which was to generate a better life through gaming for all Indian people in the state. The inequity in the current gaming environment is even worse for Red Lake and White Earth. When you recognize that fully 65% of all Native people in Minnesota are members of Red Lake and White Earth Nation. A state tribal casino creates competition gaming market in the metropolitan area. Right now, Red Lake, White Earth casinos operations face competition from new casinos opening in North Dakota, South Dakota, and Canada. Yet, competition in the largest gaming market in the upper Midwest remains non-existent. Even as most studies and common knowledge information recognizes the metropolitan market has room for additional gaming. Revenue from a state tribal casino will be used to create housing for tribal members, create job training programs, fund law enforcement to make our reservations safer, build the infrastructure for a better life for our members, schools, healthcare, clinics, roads, and etc. This bill will also benefit minorities of color in economic development, housing, education, healthcare, and employment as such. A state tribal casino will also create jobs in the metropolitan area for construction workers, hotel, casino workers, some of whom could be tribal members living off our reservation. In addition, revenues of the state will allow it to fund priorities. You, legislators, as leaders of our state, view as important. For 9 years, there has been a debate in the halls of the legislature about whether to expand casino gambling in this state. However, there has not been a debate about what was created by Indian gaming 15 years ago. As with some legislation, what was created was a few winners and everyone else. Before you vote again next session to expand gaming, I ask you to seriously consider what Red Lake and White Earth proposal tries to accomplish. The bill will keep all the revenues in the state of Minnesota. It will create equity in Indian gaming. It will bring additional revenue in the general fund for the state, bring competition to the metropolitan gaming market, and address needs of the state's poor citizens. In closing, I think the Minnesota Gaming Equity Act is the best proposal of any you have heard today or in a year's past. Thank you again for giving me this opportunity to appear before you today. I look forward to discussing this Minnesota Gaming Equity Act with you as you deliberate the issues the upcoming 2004 legislative session. Be good.
Thank you very much. Does anybody got any questions? If not, would you represent Silver?
Mr. Chair and Darrell, you're to be congratulated for trying to make your people in that reservation and White Earth have a better life than those that are located in the metropolitan area. A couple of questions. The casino at Thief River Falls, is that with the motel, is that producing revenue for the Red Lake tribe now?
Chairman, Representative Goldberg, currently our gaming people are here to, Jeff, do you want to answer that?
If you do, you got to come on down.
You have to come down.
You have to come down to the microphone because it's on tape, which is fine. And then you have to identify yourself for the tape.
Good afternoon. Jeff Jasperson. I'm the general manager for Thief River Falls Casino Hotel and Indoor Water Park. It is indeed producing revenues.
Mr. Chairman, I had an opportunity to drive beat truck up in there, so I went by it several times. I can drive by casinos real easy. I don't stop. I'm sorry. but is the hotel complex also being filled? I mean, are you able to attract, my interest in that is, are you being able to attract people other than recycling your own money, which happens, I think, a lot on the Red Lake Casino itself. Are you able to attract people from outside, and if so, where are they coming from? Are they coming from Canada?
They're coming from about a two-hour distance, and the water park is a different concept that we're trying. We're finding good success on our weekends, Sunday through Thursday. It's not that way, of course, because we don't have a family available. Holidays are good as well. Anytime that there's any sort of school break, and we're marketing certainly schools to, you know, hopefully attract business to the hotel and water park.
So your hotel and water park, Mr. Chairman and Jeff, is more family orientated. Is that what you're attempting to do in that facility?
That is a concept.
Mr. Chairman, one other question, and I know that Red Lake, and I don't know if they're in partnership with White Earth or not, are considering or are in the process of building or opening a casino at International Falls. Can you tell me a little bit about that and the progress of it?
Mr. Chair,
yes, sir.
Representative Goldberg, International Falls Council and Economic Development contacted Red Lake asking us whether there was a profit opportunity for us to open a casino for their economic development in International Falls. And so it was brought up to the council, but the Council of International Falls plus their economic development did a presentation at the council, the tribal council meeting. And right there, Red Lake just passed it unanimously. They're looking for it to see if it's possible that we can do it, but it's still a long ways away if it ever happens.
So, Mr. Chairman, just to follow up on that, your process of evaluating that, if everything goes well with that, when would be the timetable for you to, let's say, start construction and that type of thing? What kind of timetable are you looking at?
Well, right now we're looking at like 3 to 4 years, maybe longer.
Okay. And Mr. Chairman, is that just with Red Lake alone, or are you in partnership with White Earth on that?
It's our economic development.
With Red Lake?
Yeah, we do have one more in our contract.
Which is?
To open up another casino.
Mr. Chairman, just one other thing then. Is the Thief River Falls Casino Red Lake only, or is that in partnership with White Earth as well?
Red Lake.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Next testifier. Hi, welcome to our committee. Please identify yourself.
My name is Andrew Favorite. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, ladies and gentlemen. I'm a member of the White Earth Band. I'm a historian for the White Earth Nation. I've been asked to describe for you the state of the White Earth Tribe so you may realize the hardships that still exist for the majority of Indians in Minnesota. I live in Waubun, Minnesota, on the western portion of the reservation, and you may not know, our reservation was established by treaty of March 19, 1867. It was set aside 837,440 acres, of which is about 1,300 square miles, 36 townships for those of you who are farmers or from counties. However, our tribe only controls 8% of the original reservation. The rest is either privately owned or is a public domain, county, state, and federal entities. Our section of the world is a vast and very remote. While we have a small grocery store in our town, the prices are high. The justification is they have to truck it a long ways. To go to a larger chain store, Detroit Lakes, Park Rapids, Bemidji, to go to Walmart, I have to drive 50 miles round trip to Detroit Lakes. To get to Target store is even worse, 120 miles. Now this is mostly for my wife's sake. 120 miles round trip to Fargo, or 150 miles round trip to Bemidji. As you can see, the money generated on our reservation doesn't stay on the reservation. It goes to surrounding towns. We are afflicted with numerous social issues that surround us, playing and feeding off each other. Our schools are overcrowded. Our high school dropout rates are enormous. We're in dire need of new facilities, playground equipment, funding for early childhood and after school programs. We need to demonstrate to our young people that getting an education will bring them added opportunities in their life. We are dealing with numerous public health issues. You may not know that our suicide rate is 8 times the national average. Our diabetes is at epidemic proportions among adults over 40 years of age. That's estimated about 40 to 50% of the adult people. Depression is a major health concern. People lose hope when they can't find work or they feel they can't provide for their families. They turn to drugs and alcohol for escape. I speak from experience. I'm a recovering alcoholic. Chemical dependency and drug addiction are sad realities for us. The demand for drugs has spawned an active trade in the reservation. It's covert, but it exists. Both of our tribes have worked hard to crack down on drug dealers, but this has led to recent shootings and an environment of fear and intimidation. Our police and court systems are underfunded, and now those dedicated people are being shot at also. And in May, our housing headquarters at White Earth was burnt by arson. And we've been leaning hard on criminal activity and drug dealing in our housing units, and it's kind of a battle up there, so to speak. I sit on the housing board for our reservation, and affordable housing is one of our most dire immediate needs. Right now, 511 families at White Earth are on the waiting list for a home. There are 870 additional houses that are in need of renovation and repair. Every year that we delay renovating these houses, the costs increase. Working is a good thing. We want to contribute and share in the spirit of economic well-being. Our casino and tribal operations are the largest employers in the area. But work at the casino often creates more hardship than advantages. A person working at our casino in some cases would have to commute over 100 miles a day for a job that pays $8 to $10 an hour. This is not a livable wage, especially if they have to pay for child care. Working knocks them off the assistance and safety net programs, and they are forced to choose between being unemployed or the working poor. Our official unemployment rate is 43%. However, that number doesn't include the numerous people whose benefits have run out but are still without jobs. We estimate that the actual unemployment rate is closer to 60%. We don't want to be a burden to the state or the public. We just want a fair and equal chance to overcome these issues that weigh us down. Funding is our number one obstacle, and this casino would be a huge, giant step towards progress and self-sufficiency. Miigwech. You. Questions?
Any questions? Representative Stolberg.
I don't want to be the only one to ask questions. just a question. You have the casino at the Monoman, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And is that the only casino that you're involved with?
Yes, sir.
And Mr. Chairman, do you still running buses from Winnipeg down?
As far as I know.
And Mr. Chairman, is that I've not been to buy your casino. I have been in very, very few casinos. I just it's not my.
There's a lot of beats west of us. So
yeah, there is. But my question is, do you have hotel accommodations there as well?
Yes, sir.
And has that been financially successful for you, the hotel, or is that a drain?
It's successful during the tourist season, and the non-tourist season, we scramble.
Okay. Mr. Chair, just a comment.
Yes.
The casinos that both the reservations operate now are really a jobs program. There's been very little money that's been able to be reinvested back into the reservations because of low traffic flows, and you know they just don't have the traffic counts that they need to make these casinos very profitable. They can help, and that's why we're here today to propose this in the northern suburbs of the metropolitan area, so that they can generate the dollars that they're going to need. They could build another casino, but still they have to have traffic flow, and you just don't get the traffic counts that you need to generate the dollars that are required to reinvest back in these reservations.
Representative Boudreau.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and this is a question to Representative Haas. Representative Haas, I'm not sure what the amount of, you have percentages here. Percentages would go towards specific entities and very worthwhile entities. I thank both of you for coming and telling us about your needs on the reservations and their needs that we really need to look at. We need to address those needs. And I think, Representative Haas, you've done a good job in attempting to do so in your proposal. But my question is, what are the dollars? I know it's difficult to estimate revenues, but you must have some idea of the amount of dollars that would be generated and would be provided for these needs, housing, job training, chemical dependency treatment, just housing, maybe I said housing, but in the healthcare needs, you know, diabetes, depression, all of those issues that really we must address. What kind of dollars would you be applying towards those needs?
Mr. Chair,
Chairman House,
and Representative Bedrill, the state's portion, which is 20%, would be on approximately $90 million based on our performance per year. And so that is then out of that $90 million is where they would allocate those percentages for the different needs that they are projecting. Now, what this is basically reimbursing the states for our costs. That if they want the state to continue to administrate the programs because everything's in place and to run them, but they will reimburse us those dollar amounts for those programs.
Go ahead.
So, Mr. Chairman and Representative Haas, would it be then 10% of $90 million that would be applied towards the tribal needs? Or what's...
Yeah.
Please clarify.
Mr. Chair and Representative Bedrill, if you look at it, 20%, the proposal is 3% of the money going into the host cities and counties on there, which I don't know if we can direct that through legislation, and I'm going to look at that closer. But that would leave 7% roughly of the money, so you're looking at about 40% of the money is going to come back. So you're looking at about $36 to $40 million is what the state would have for those areas.
From both tribes.
Right.
Per year, right? Hi, welcome to the committee. You got to identify yourself for the tape.
My name is Rick Rothhausen. I am the Chief Financial Officer for Red Lake Gaming Enterprises. I believe that the amount that would flow through the state to those programs would be in the neighborhood of $5.6 million, the 60% of the 10% of $90 million. So $9 million is directed in the legislation, and taking out 3% of that, or 30% actually of the 10%, 70% of the $9 million would be about $6 million. Now, that is what is earmarked to go to the state for those programs. There is profit left that would be used for governmental services and development of economic opportunity on the two reservations, and that is in addition to that amount there. So I wasn't clear if your question was what would benefit the tribes. Yes, that would be on the magnitude of $80
million. $80 million?
Yes.
Per year.
Per year.
Per year.
Are you done?
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the $80 million is on top of the $90 million. Is that what we're talking about? Okay. Is there anything being put in place to make sure that these appropriations, say the 1.5% for education, that's we're not going to just reduce our appropriations later on, you know, in the in that we pay for those already?
Sorry. Okay. No, this is a reimbursement. This is not to the state. So we're not taking and reinvesting. You know, this actually will free up additional money in those budgets for other needs, is what I would see.
No, and I think that's the intent. I'm just wondering, you know, as the way the process works, at some mm-hmm. point you could look at it and say, well, they're getting this 1.5% mm-hmm. money, so we why don't we just allocate less money from the state to that
to other program? Needs, right. There is nothing to address that, and I think, you know, I don't know how we would do it, because any money that's sitting, you know, you talk about a fund, they were talking earlier about the $450 million set aside as the fee. As you know, around here, everything's subject to possible borrowing or raiding, you know, when there's needs for the state. So, you know, and we can't really bind future legislatures to their decisions either.
Mr. Chair, is this going to be separately accounted, budgeting-wise?
Mr. Chair, Representative Thiessen, I don't know how they're going to account for this, but I think that's something we'll have to address.
It may be one way, at least, to, so right. everybody knows what's going on.
Right.
How much, in terms of the jobs that are going to be created at the casino, do you know what kind of jobs are those? And I can't remember. It's 3,000 or 4,000 jobs, but then we're talking most of those are at least at the casino up in White Earth. It's $8 to $10 an hour jobs. Do we have any estimates of what how those jobs, 3,000 or 4,000 jobs, break down in terms of kind of permanent jobs and what they'd be paying?
Chairman Rhodes, Representative Thiessen, I believe that the we would have probably 70% of those jobs would be what would be called entry level, and 30% would be management oriented positions. Presently at the casinos that the two tribes operate, all full-time jobs are eligible for health benefits and retirement plans, which is not that's not the norm for entry-level positions in much of the hospitality industry, I believe. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, just a follow-up. Thank you. That does. And when you kind of are running your estimates, is that something you've considered in kind of preparing the financials that you've done here, that you would include health benefits and retirement benefits and those kind of things?
Chairman and Representative, yes, it is.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Thiessen asked my question.
Any other questions, Representative Haas?
Mr. Chair, I think
you raised your hand.
No.
Mr. Chairman, I would just have a question for any of the witnesses who would care to answer it when everyone else is finished.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, the estimate of the revenue, the state share would be $90 million, is that correct? That
correct.
Comes from the in-lieu tax in the bill, which is 20% of adjusted gross revenue, is that correct?
Correct.
So the adjusted gross revenues are assumed to be $450 million a year, is that correct?
Yes.
So, Mr. Chairman, I'm wondering what assumed gross wager is that based on? What's the assumption for gross wager at the casino that would lead to the $450 million estimate in adjusted gross revenue?
Mr. Chairman, and I can't read your John name, Williams, and I know you're not a representative.
Mr. Williams.
Mr. Williams. That is based on slot revenue in the neighborhood of $500 million.
Total slot revenue or
total
wager on slots?
Total slot revenue, net win as defined in the bill.
Mr. Chairman, what assumption is made then on the gross wager that would be derived from?
Okay, that I don't know exactly, but gross wager would probably be somewhere in the range of 7 to 8% of gross wager.
So Mr. Chairman, then the assumed gross wager would be somewhere around $6.5 billion. Is that correct? If you use those percentages?
That's correct, and it's comparable to the other proposals that have been presented. Net win is a small fraction of gross wager, as you may know. I don't know if everybody's aware of that.
Explain gross wager. That's the amount of quarters going into the machine.
These could either be coin operated or token operated. It would be the total amount wagered on all the machines
for a period of,
so for whichever tax period is selected. It's usually collected daily, I believe.
What, the tax is collected daily?
Well, Mr. Chairman, in the case of the lottery, the proceeds, I believe, are deposited daily and are then into designated accounts, which the lottery then sweeps on a regular basis.
The lottery does what?
Well, sure, I'd have to yield to Mr. Anderson for more specific information on how
Mr. Chair?
Representative.
They're currently working and refining the pro forma, and we'll have those numbers once we get into session that we can look at, and we'll supply Mr. Williams with a copy so that he can analyze it.
Any other question? Or Representative
Mr. Chair and Representative Haas and all, I had to leave for a couple minutes, so I needed to get a couple figures down. How many people are there in the White Earth tribe?
About 22,000 enrolled members.
22,000?
Yes, ma'am.
And then, so there's $80 million then that gets split between the Red Lake and White Earth tribes, so that makes how much per person?
Sir. Mr. Chair, Representative, Samuelson. The intention is not to divide the revenue up per tribal member. However, your question, to answer your question, it would amount to somewhere less than $3,000 per member of the combined tribes. However, the money would be used for government services and to provide for economic opportunity.
Mr. Chair, then none of the members would receive any of this money?
The plan is to not directly issue per capita payments to them. It would be to enrich their lives, as the testifiers have indicated.
Okay, thank you.
And Mr. Chair, just to comment to that, Representative Samuelson, you can do one of two things with money. You can just give it to people, or you can provide opportunity for them. And what the two tribes have decided to do is provide opportunity, because they want the reservations to grow. They want people to work. They want to create jobs. They want to create economic vitality to this area and viability to the area. And that's their goal with the money.
I think it would be providing the infrastructure that never was provided for them, that was supposed to have been provided
Correct.
For them in some cases. Representative Thiessen.
Well, and thank you, Mr. Chair. Building on that point, what's your current kind of tribal government budgets? What are the numbers right now? What impact would this money have on kind of what you're able to do right now?
Yes, sir.
Thiessen. That's fine.
There's a lot of needs in our reservation that we need to address here. Like law enforcement, like I stated before, we need our law enforcement officers are underpaid. Currently, our law enforcement program, the whole itself, is under budgeted. We're a self-governance program, and the Bureau only provides us so much funds. And it's been like that ever since we became self-governance. It hasn't gone up in our officers are, well, way underpaid. Plus we have a fire department, we have a big land base, and we only have two fire departments. And that's underfunded. And our tribal court is underfunded. And like I stated before, when the state of Minnesota was had this big deficit, our patrol programs were affected. And some of the revenues we get, we have to pick up what we're intending to use for economic development. We have to pick up those programs that were
Mr. Chair,
Thank you.
To that point, Representative Thiessen, both tribal governments had to make cuts in their budget this last year, and they were hoping that they could generate some revenue from the casinos to help cushion those cuts, but they weren't able to. So they had to make, the casinos did not help them in the decisions they had to make, which would have been a little bit nicer. And this proposal would have helped them greatly in those decisions. And if you as I traveled the reservations this year and I saw, you know, what life was like on the reservation, there is a lot of need. And it's not only need for the reservation, but it's the town surrounding and providing support services and jobs to those reservations. And that's, you know, everybody benefits from this proposal. That's what's the beauty of this proposal is, it's a win-win proposal for the state of Minnesota and the two bands that are proposing it, because we all participate, and I think it meets the needs that we have all heard from and the concern from our constituents that we're not receiving money from Indian Gaming at this point, that we are actually becoming partners with these two bands to receive some. In fact, they approached the state on this. This was their concept. They want to, you know, they're residents of the state of Minnesota. That's how they presented it to me. They're Minnesotans also, and they want to help the state, and they want to help the people on their reservation. And this proposal will do that. And I think it's a Minnesota Gaming Equity Act, but really it's a Minnesota jobs program, you know. And I think that's really and it's a Minnesota partnership. And I think it fulfills, you know, a lot of what we're trying to do down here. You know, the governor's talked about providing jobs for Minnesotans, building business. You know, this proposal does that. It reinvests. It takes areas that are in poverty and provides an influx of cash that's going to actually help these areas out. You know, all the money generated in Minnesota stays in Minnesota. It's 100% reinvested back into not only the metro economy, but critically up in the northern part of the state, into their economy to provide the dollars they need. So, you know, in jobs, you know, we all want jobs, and we want, you know, we've talked in Health and Human Services and in the different committees, Commerce, about unemployment and how do we create jobs and how do we help people in poverty. This bill does it, you know, and that's the beauty of this bill and this partnership that the Red Lake and the White Earth Bands have proposed to us.
Representative Houston?
Yeah, I don't disagree with anything anybody just said. I'm just, my question, I guess I must not have stated it clearly, was how much more is $80 million to these tribes than what is currently kind of going through their economy?
Mr. Chair, Representative Thiessen, I believe that the current budget of the Red Lake government is in the magnitude of $40 million. And with that, they continue to fall further behind, as Treasurer Siki indicated. This would give them the resources to provide opportunity for their members to pull them out of poverty. It is not going to pull them out of poverty. It will give them the opportunity to do that for themselves.
Any other?
Is that similar with the White Earth Band as well? Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Representative Boudreau or Samuelson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this would be a question for those here representing the tribes. First of all, have you had the support of the other tribes in your proposal?
Chairman,
Boudreau.
We did send out letters. No, we don't have no support. Just Red Lake and White.
Okay, and Mr. Chairman, and to those representatives also, have you had any discussions with some of the other tribes and who have had very successful revenue opportunities as far as helping you with some of the infrastructure needs that you have?
Chairman, no, I not myself, not myself. I have it.
How about Representative Haas, Mr. Chairman?
Representative Haas, thank you, Mr. Chair, and
Representative Bedreau. I have not had those discussions. I've had discussions with other members of the band, and they have asked for help, but they have not received it. No, last year the other tribes in the MICA group, which is their gaming group, lobbied heavily against this bill because they felt it was competition. And I think we heard today from Mr. Belisle that in his analysis of the gaming market in the metro areas, that we could actually put in another casino and it would have very little effect on the existing operations. And yet he did make a comment the fact that it could even, in his speculation, increase the gaming in those other casinos because of the availability. Because people don't go to one casino, they like variety, and they'll move around. From what I'm, you know, I'm learning a lot about gambling. For a person who doesn't gamble, I'm learning a lot. it's fascinating to look at it. But they lobbied heavy against it because of the competition issue. And, you know, this is, I don't understand that, because this is, you know, an opportunity for the Native American community, not a detriment. And that's why I really have a tough time understanding why they are so against helping their own brothers out.
So, Mr. Chairman, Representative Haas, what you're saying is the other tribes who have had very good success with gaming and casino gaming and very good revenue are opposed to this proposal, and as well they have not offered to assist.
Correct.
For infrastructure needs. Thank you.
Representative Samuelson, did you have a question?
Yes, Mr. Chair, up? Representative Haas. This is just a point of clarification. Mm-hmm. You mentioned something about that when you do come back to the committee again, that there will be some more detail. Mm-hmm. Will some of that detail actually be some of the infrastructure and some of the changes that the state is able to do to create these jobs and assist the tribes?
Representative Haas.
Mr. Chair and Representative Samuelson, first of all, the tribes themselves will be the ones developing the programs, and they can put something together to tell us what they're going to do. We will be just reimbursed for what we're helping them with now in our current programs we provide the reservation. Mm-hmm. So, but when you look at the influx of $40 million each reservation a year, they can do a lot with that, and they are going to have to put plans together and that, mm-hmm. because they're going to have to come together between the tribe members and the tribal council and figure mm-hmm. out how they're going to make this all work, and that's a decision that they will make.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Post, any closing comments?
Mr. Chair, thank you, and members. I would, we've addressed a lot of things in this proposal today. I don't think this, in my mind, I wouldn't be here today if I thought we were adding a new type of gambling to the state. But since we already have Indian gaming allowed in the state and it is prospering and the state is not participating in it, that this proposal before us today gives us the opportunity as a state to participate in Indian gaming and to provide additional revenues for some of the needs that we will have to address with this legislature. And as this proposal goes forward, if anybody has questions or concerns, please do not hesitate to let me know, because this is a program that after I saw the bill and I met with the tribal leaders and heard their story, I just felt it was that important that we can all work together in a partnership to make Minnesota a better place to live. So thank you, members.
Thank you, and thank you all for coming. And with this, we are adjourned.